Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Well, I don't know. That's fucking... My phone doesn't work. Hold on.
Hello.
Hello. I can't hear you.
But I know you're there. You're working somewhere.
Do we have dead air? Is this the first dead air show? Perhaps.
Let me see. Oh, yeah. I'm on. I'm babbling. And I can't hear you. Oh, I'm on. Well, welcome to Seas of Change, my friends. Today's episode is, it's going to be a bit of a litmus test. For those of you who can see me but can't hear me, and those of you that can hear me but can't see me, I'm having a fantastic day. I can hear you now, just in a nick
of
time.
Yay, okay, well, I just had to...
It was witty, but I was going to have to add bourbon for it to go on much longer.
Jesus Christ. Okay, well, yes, hello, happy Sunday. This is Danielle St. John, and I'm the host of Seeds of Change. I said all that before, but nobody heard me. But I'm back, so hello, how are you?
Oh, my God, I'm so good. So good. And I'm whipping into my Liz Taylor Richard Burton film collection. And it just adds such a, shouldn't say quiet to the day. We're doing great. We got sunshine. We got fantastic possibilities. It's, life is good. Life is really good. And
oh,
I'm a horse.
Very good.
So, hey, how could it get better? And I might be cleansing. I might be cleansing. I might go on a diet. I might even shave my legs. Who knows? The sky's the limit. How are you doing, baby?
I'm doing so good. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with, like, what moon is not in retrograde or is in retrograde, but I can tell you that my life is fantastic and getting better by the day.
I'll tell you why.
So,
you know why? Do you
why?
Know why? I was like, oh, I need new shoes. Good Lord. I need new everything. Well, I met somebody really cute. I was like, oh, my God. This will be fun. So I go, and I'm like, I'm going to buy some shoes. I'm going to do this and that. And I'm throwing stuff away, cleaning the house. And I'm like, I don't need a million things. I'm like, wow, it's amazing how you can get, like, motivated when you're like, oh, my goodness. Let's have a relationship. This will be fun. So Chukka boots are there. Chukka boots. And I thought, the 1970s. Oh, those were my favorite things when I was in fourth grade. Was the Chukka boot. They're back in Skechers. And I go, that's why. It has nothing to do with anything else other than the fact that the 1970s are making a comeback. That's all we needed.
Mm.
And so that was my theory last night. And I'm like, isn't that funny? Because do you know what a Chukka boot is?
I don't, but I could certainly look it up.
You will. Well, they don't call them that, though. I know they don't call them that. But they're now in vogue, and they're coming back. And they were the most hideous. My mother hated them. No, those are ugly. Ugly. So if they were ugly, we couldn't wear them. And, of course, ugly cleats.
Are they by chance a low, like not a tall boot? Like moccasin.
Mm-hmm. They're
yeah.
like a moccasin boot. From Poland.
Yes.
They were like a European style. But back then, Europe didn't have style yet back in the 70s. It was still kind of, if it was European, it was like ugly, like Dutch ugly, you know? Not like, wow, it's coming out of Europe. It's a whole different genre back. They're still recouping from, you know, the 1930s and the war. They didn't have style. They had burlap, you know? But then, and
yes.
Hence, I mean, if you look at what the Chukka boots are, they were like ugly suede. But the comfort, and they were, I think they were out for a year maybe. Like, and then they went away. I know my mother was so happy. Anything that was hideous and she didn't like to look at and was gone made her happy. And then I'd find something cool.
something else that she that was healthy, right? But I'm like, oh my God, Skechers. Skechers are now like the cheapest, most comfortable shoe for if you're going to do sneakers. So I'm like, I need to get away from the sneakers and the jeans and all that. Like, let's get like a nice, comfy, flowing, what's her face? Oh, not Anne Bancroft, but something stylish, a timeless, comfortable, like Candace Bergen and Diana Keaton used to, just kind of like just flawless looking, but not like dressing. I'm like, that's the kind of outfits I should get instead of everything that will go with Diesel, right? Diesel grease. You know?
Yeah. I'm like in like the land of perpetual yoga pants, you know? And I'll like, and you know, I'll dress it up a little bit.
That needs to go away. Yeah, like, I mean,
why?
Not everybody can wear their pajamas outside. We are a nation of like, we're so unkempt. We're way too comfortable. We need to up it a little bit. Yoga pants and that all is indoor wear. Those are pajamas. We need to like have some stylish looking
They're
good.
They're certainly not
clothes.
Indoor wear if we wear them to yoga. They're very comfy.
Not,
I'm just saying.
I know, but life is not a yoga class, so you know you can't like. You need to up, not everyone can pull them off, so they don't look good on everybody. But that's what everybody.
I
wears.
Think yoga pants makes everybody's so, ass look good. I think everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
See,
I hear my
grandmother saying, "Oh, you need a girdle. You cannot leave the house without a girdle." And I'm like, "Why do I have to see this? Why am I seeing you're almost naked, but you're trapped in something that's not quite spandex? Because if it was spandex, I wouldn't see all the cellulites and whatnot." See, I don't know if it's different in Illinois than it is California, but we don't have. People are not shape here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not in the best shape. But, but most people in California are in shape. We are one. I think San Diego is one of the most fit towns in the country. Like, at least at one point it was. Like, we definitely take our outside time and use it to our advantage. We can go to the beach year-round. You know, we can... And, you know, my husband is from Chicago, so he's, like, he knows your side of it, too. But, like, here it's, like, you know, everybody's outside. He knows, you know, he sees everybody outside. The only thing that, like, he complains about here is that nobody uses their outdoor space enough. You know, like, we've got this, you know, like, iconic place right next to us in our neighborhood. It's called Ocean Beach Sunset Cliffs, and that's what they are. There's sunset cliffs and you know there's all of these like very very expensive houses lining the cliffs and nobody's ever out there, nobody's ever out on, you know, enjoying their outside space. Like it's he said that's kind of weird.
They're not playing on their mountains.
That's probably where they are. They're probably hiking somewhere, you know. That's why they're not there. But he's like, I just know in Chicago everybody would be using the space every nice day.
I don't think so, because like everyone is inside. It's beautiful. We have actual real sky. The sky blue from the crayon box from my youth is in the sky with no chemicals. It's gorgeous. For the
right
last
now?
3 days, I'm like, wow, this is what's going on. Are they out of money? And we're truly out of money because they don't have the chemicals to spray our skies. Because
they're spraying our skies.
Well, you know, you got to take turns, right? When you're on a budget.
Yeah, basically.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
They used to be able to, we could go spray the whole globe at one point in time back when we were rich and had real money. Yeah. But anyways, I'm like, this is, it's gorgeous. It's springtime. It's cold, but it's like, it's wonderful, but nobody's outside. I'm like, it is cold. I'm like, how could it be sunny? Brilliantly blue and wonderfully sunny, no clouds, and it is 30. What is the temperature? It's 39 degrees, but it's a real feel of like 27. And I'm like, wait a minute. And then the wind is like 14. But how do they make this happen? Because it shouldn't be that damn cold. There's no variables, especially if the sun is out. But it's not. It's indoor weather. But if we had a little more shitspa, we'd all be outside maybe doing something.
Yeah, exactly.
No. We've become indoor creatures here, and it's kind of sad.
Well,
and
you guys
I'm
have to huddle for warmth. You're in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. But when it's 39 degrees as opposed to, 17 below, which is that would be the wintertime equivalent of this today's temperature in December. That's where this doesn't, because you don't have the clouds. You don't have a drastic wind. You've got the sun. How is it? It's not true 39, because that's almost 40 degrees, which is a pretty nice day. But instead, you've got real feel. A real feel.
Did you say 40 is a nice day?
Yeah. As opposed to zero and snowing and an ice storm? Yes. See, that's where having, what is the word? It is a... a vast selection, and that's not the word I'm looking for, of seasons. We have change.
I think you got four,
this,
right?
We got four. Four.
We got two.
And it goes into the land of eight, because there's – and it fluctuates. We can get three of them in 1 week here because it's so nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't – you have to have, flip-flops, shorts, boots, gloves, scarves, because it's crazy how it can go from warmer to cold. But technically, as opposed to true winter, this is true winter when it's snow on the ground, it's got that crunchy noise because it's so cold and you never see the sun, and if the snow is blowing in the wind, you got wind chill, wind chill.
I did experience wind chill when I lived in Pittsburgh. So I did experience a winter, and I got to say, I'm not a big fan.
No, so there's where your perspective of 40 is nice compared to that. And it's like, this is where we're like 10 degrees from we can all go, no coats and get a little farmer's tan going here. And then maybe even go barefoot because it won't be frozen slush under the grass, but in the mud.
No, I have to tell you that we did have a winter this year, and we're still kind of experiencing a winter.
I know.
California, lots and lots and lots of rain. The mm-hmm. clouds are sparking up again right now, and we're about to get another, mini river, atmospheric river. San Diego is spared the brunt of it, but, Northern California, Central California, they're pretty packed. They've got... they got hit way harder than we did. Yeah. So I'm not a fan of this winter. I like the rain.
Well, we're going to switch into re-education camp pretty soon because you need to be a fan of the weather.
I know, it's coming.
It's going to dominate the whole world. Now tell me, have you ever heard of an atmospheric river? I'm like, what are they talking about? That's all of a sudden the newest rage. All the rage in the weather jargon is the atmospheric river that's hovering over you. And I'm like, this is not, you just made this up. This is like the villain in one of these new Marvel movies.
Yeah, right.
We've never had. I'm sorry.
I'm already picturing the costume.
Wake up, Aquaman from his drunken stupor, it could be commercial
but
the next movie.
But we need it. We need it so bad. All of our, our reservoirs were basically empty, and because that's because of mismanagement, I'd have to say. It's all because of this stupid little fish, the Delta smelt, that we let, billions of gallons of fresh water flow into the ocean, just because, environmentalists get all up in arms because there's a teeny tiny fish that is, might go extinct, a bait fish, basically. But you know what? Californians are going to go extinct if we can't have water, and most of the country is going to suffer if we can't water our crops that you guys eat. We grow a lot of your food, we should probably think about what we're going to do, but all we're doing is thinking about a stupid little bait fish. Now it's extinct. Let's fix the problem. Let's save our rainwater. Why can't we save our rainwater?
I know. Well, it's because the computer program doesn't. Computers don't like human beings, basically. That's the end game of the story, the book.
I know. That's why I won't let my husband hook my Roomba up to the internet.
I know. Oh, you can't say it. Oh, no. See, why the problem? You're the problem.
He tried. I was like, family. I will throw that thing off the balcony if you hook it up to the internet. I am not going to be how Terminator starts.
Oh, it's already a couple of years ago when they got the Alexa and this cylinder that's not. I'm like, what is that? And it's loud. Oh, is it? That's your boombox. I don't even know what they call them, but that's their musical thing that they have here. And I don't want to learn what it's called. I'm not going to be sucked into this shit. But it's got good sound, but still, if it fell into your bathtub, it would kill you. Just the same. I don't care what it is. But once they had that and they could talk to it with the Alexa, and I'm like, oh, for God's sakes. And then that little...
No, I don't. I do not let Alexa into my house.
Sweep up the crumbs. Well, it's gone mainstream. My whole family's got it. And I was just... I had to bite my tongue because do I always have to be like a pain in the ass? Well, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about I went to the dentist. And, you know, I ended up, you know, I try to be nice, but I keep telling myself, be nice. This is, I tell myself, this is my inner, and sometimes I yell at myself, stop it, you need to be nice. And because my crown fell out, I'm like, you know what, my dentist, he retired, he's gone. So there's no factory warranty. I'm thinking, oh, for fuck's sake. Okay, if you want to charge me for a new crown and get your money, I want simply the crown put back in. No. This is going to be a production. And it's like new age medicine where I have this little girl telling me who's at the dentist. And I love, and I had to like, everybody got eggs after the whole visit because I'm like, do you like eggs? I'll have to bring some eggs.
Oh, that was sweet.
I'm a pain in the ass. And they all love eggs. So Ruby, anyways, everyone thinks, I'm such a neurotic mess of cuteness that they overlook it. But I end up telling this woman, I'm like, how old are you? I've had it with you. She wanted to, like, have my jaw broken and do surgery because I have a very unique, I'm Nordic, and I got the underbite, and I got the cross.
Yeah. Class 3.
Kind of vicious. We're like another species. And
well, yeah, there's class 1 and there's class 2 and there's class. I remember I ran dental offices for 10 years, so I know all about what's going on with you.
So
already.
I have what they call a vicious crossbite, right? So
a stage 3, yeah, class 3.
She's like, oh, the click, and the click only comes when I'm pissed off and upset. And of course, I'm that urge there. And I go, my uncle was a dentist. I would have had one braces and oral surgery. I want the hole in my mouth gone, right? And my crown put back in. So we're going until the land of that. And then none of this will work because I smoke. And well, honey, I'm never going to stop smoking. And she wanted me to start vaping. I was like, what? That's when I had to go, how old are you? I'm like, do you not know that vaping is like the worst thing in the world for you? I've tried
I don't know. My mom vapes. Like she hasn't smoked a cigarette in 20 years now.
My best friend smokes too, does the little vape thing, and she's got really, really bad respiratory things going on. I used to smoke hash. Hash is like the worst, hardest, roughest thing in the world to smoke. And you start coughing, and it's like you could never stop coughing because hash is rough. Ask your mom. I don't know if she had it. See, I never did crack and all that shit. It was a different kind of drugs.
She probably did hash. I know my dad grew weed, so I'm sure she did
hash. It was rough.
Hash.
It was a rough one. Vaping is 100 times. I couldn't. I couldn't put it. I about to die. I was like, well, why don't we just smoke hash instead? Because this is crazy. And this is what you kids are doing. And you're doing monstrous billowing smokes of this. I don't know. Anyways, and then there's the popcorn lung. We were battling with not
statistics, but what's the thing? Studies. And I go, I'm sorry. I still stick with old.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have studies back then.
Yeah.
We knew how to do things. And we didn't pull teeth. You didn't have to pull teeth. So I'm arguing over pulling this tooth. And then they took a picture. It's infected.
Did they say you need to pull it?
Yeah. See, my old guy always would just go into the land of, you're going to have a bridge. And I'm like, I don't want a bridge. Sounds like old people stuff. I'm like, no, I don't want a bridge. Whatever it was, I didn't know what it was. I didn't want it. His sister was like, you're going to get a bridge.
Can I show you what it is? I know what it is. I can tell you precisely
what it is. They won't give it to me. My new dentist won't give it to me.
Won't give it to you? Do they want you to get an implant?
Yes. Yes. So that was the argument. And that's when we went into the land of, do I have to be crazy? Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, she ended up having to read me the insert for the implant. Because it comes in like a Nicorette box. It's a bone implant, right? And I'm like,
mm-hmm. I know exactly what they are.
Something? It's, I was like, no. I said, who? And I didn't even go to the land of cadavers. My sister did one right there. She ended up having the same thing 20 years ago. She had a bone graft. And I was like,
yeah,
I'm not doing that. So I'm thinking.
So is that why they won't let you have a bridge? My husband, like, I don't want to, like, put out his medical details, but he's dealing with the same kind of deal.
My bridge is actually because of my bite that scares her. Well, see, it comes down to, I'm going to have to, like, buy them an egg farm after this conversation. It comes down to, if they listen to the show, it comes down to the fact that they don't want to do work. And you know how old she is? She's 38, my favorite age. I just was I knew it. And after that, because she didn't want to open up these, because I have basically all crowns everywhere except for the front. And she's like, we have to displace these two crowns, and you never, it's like opening up a can of worms. And I'm thinking, your job. But nonetheless, she doesn't want to do it. And it's twice as much money for the implants than the bridge, $3,000 as opposed to $6,000, of course. And then it is the newest technology. They don't want to even embrace the fact that maybe because of my jaw bite and whatever, my old dentist, who's old school, he didn't want to go to the land of implants. He wanted the bridge, and he's explained it, but now those records are lost and whatever. And I'm like, okay. My thing was, okay, where's this bone? What do you mean? I'm like, what do you mean it's a fake bone? No, it's a real bone. What do you mean it's a real bone?
Bone grafting,
is this?
Right? We're talking about bone grafting, right?
I'm not doing bone grafting. I'm sorry. We'll just pull it. I'll have a hole in my head. We're not grafting. This is for tooth. I'm not going to – I don't do surgery. It's like, no. It was a crazy day. And she finally got out the insert of this tooth thing, that this little plug of bone. That she goes, you know what she tells me? She tells me, people donate them. I'm like, who donates bone? I go, no, nobody donates their bones, for God's sakes. I know they do the blood. They sell their blood, which is like a donation.
No, they're artificial. They're artificial.
This is real. It's a real one. It's been bleached. I'm quite sure, from the fucking Uyghurs in China. I'm like, oh, my God. So she's trying to read this to me. And didn't answer my question. I go, so where's it from? And then my friend who I grew up with, who's still there, who's very cool, love her so much. And it was kind of like I'm surrounded by my little angels who know I'm crazy, but they're like, you got this. It's okay. But I'm like, well, what would you do? Should I go to another dentist? Are they decent dentists here, by the way? I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, am I just being neurotic and crazy? Is this pretty standard kind of thing? I'm making it more difficult. As I always do. And she goes, it's very standard. I was like, okay, fine. We'll do it. I'll be back next Monday. We'll pull it and we'll start. Put the little plug in that if I don't like it, because she had to explain to me that it's not going to seep anything into my body. It's not like a blood transfusion, because I'm like, will my body even like it? I'm like, I go, and forget about the karmic, you know, I'm going into the land of like, whose body was this? I don't want like someone who's been killed, a terrible death coming into my body. You know, I'm like that.
Well,
I'm like all over the place with this, and over only a very simple fucking, let's pull your bad tooth and put this plug in, because this is what we do for dentistry. I go into the lane of metaphysical and Uyghurs and educate, you know, all kinds of shit. And God,
but a bone graft, you're probably going to need a bone graft regardless, right?
I'm not going to do it. No, no.
Like whether you do they said you can't do a bridge anymore, right? They just have to do a.
I might be, if I went to another dentist, and then we'd have to go into the land of like extra special trips to specialists here, there, and everywhere, because no one knows.
Well, true.
No one knows how to do simple dentistry anymore, which is why I'm stuck. This was referred. This was a referral from the family, and then he's out living the life of an 8-year-old, which is another conversation I thought we could have. Was he's retired, and that's all he does is ride his bike. And I'm like, I did that when I was 8, and now I'm like, if I had money and all the time in the world, I think I would do something a little more than just ride my bike and scuba dive. And here I am in the lane of judging, you know. But I'm like, I think when we grow up and become adults, we should contribute to the earth, I'm thinking, instead of going back to what I used to do as a kid, was run around and ride my bike all day and get a tan. I was in great shape. But that's where my dentist is now doing this. That is one of the last ones that knows how to do true dentistry as opposed to all this new prefab. And now I'm like, how healthy is the implants? You know, how healthy was all these root canals that I maybe didn't need to get, but I did because I believed and trusted everything they said? Because
that's a really tough question.
You know,
and let me just say that I've had, you know, a whole career in dental. And so I've asked myself these questions, and I left because I think people are getting ripped off with dentists, you know. I left a career in dental because I went to – okay, so let me tell a little story.
Real quick, though, babe, do you know what they offered me as a selling point for this new place? We now offer adult fluoride treatments now. And I said, no, thank you. Why? I go, because it is a neurotoxin. Fluoride is a neurotoxin. And they just were flabbergasted. Didn't know why.
It's free for children. Yeah, I know, right?
So
it's a free fluoride treatment.
Like,
and you know what it is? Somebody looked up your benefits. I'm sure you've got great benefits.
Yeah, I've got great benefits.
You know?
I do. Yeah.
And said that, you know, that this plan offers adult fluoride treatments twice a year or once a year or something like that, right? Like,
I don't want fries with that.
I was a dental professional for 10 years, right? And I can tell you that was a big selling point for me as an office manager trying to, you know, schedule, you know, coordinate, you know, make sure that the hygienist is full every single hour. What can we get out of these patients? You know, what is their, you know, what does their benefits provide? Is it, you know, a full mouth series of x-rays once every 3 to 5 years versus, you know, the once a year, the bite wing x-rays, you know, where, you know, you just do the side teeth and the whole mouth, right? And all of those things, we're going to make sure that we've charged the insurance company every year so we can see and we can, you know, look at all of these things. Now, 10 years of dental training, I'm at kind of the end of my career, but I didn't know it at the time. And I was helping a dentist. He was a general dentist, but he'd been a general dentist for so long. His name was Dr. McBride, he basically had transitioned his practice to more of like an implant practice. They had a denture lab on site, which is the, you know, kind of unheard of. Like most, you know, if you need any kind of denture, any kind of prosthetic services at all, if it's a bridge, if it's a crown, if it's, you know, a denture, you send it to a dental lab, they make it and they send it back. And we install it into the patient's mouth. Right. So that was kind of unheard of. So he's kind of getting at that point, he was getting close to retirement and he basically wanted his practice to be as profitable as possible for, you know, for him to sell. And so I, as a consultant, was, you know, the first thing that I thought of is that it's kind of an industry standard at that point. That was around, gosh, I would say 2012, 2013. It was, you know, profitable. You know, one of the thing, you know, one of the things that was standard of care when you're doing implants is a CT scan, right? So I say, you know, you're going to have to do this anyway, because if you're going to get any payment from insurance company, you've got to have this machine. And not only that, it's the only real great way to see when you're placing these implants, to see how close to a major nerve you are. You know what I mean? Like all kinds, you know, of standard of care practices, you know, that that dentists are not really being paid for, right? So I knew that he needed to get a CT scanner, but I also needed to see how we were going to get patients to pay for this, right? And so, because, you know, at even the best dental plans, right, you get your $1,500, $2,000, $2,500, you know, a year maximum. You know, what is that going to do to a dental implant surgery, which is like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, right? Including the CT, you know, scans that you're going to have to perform the surgeries, all of this stuff, right? So I asked the rep when he was installing this machine, do you have any like dental codes? And at this point, I'm a dental insurance expert, quote unquote, like this is kind of a joke, but like I knew everything that there was to know about dental insurance and billing dental insurance and how to do it and frequencies and maximums and maximizing the, you know, the maximums. You're coming up to the end of your year, you know, and we'll just parlay that into next year and get the maximum out of a single, you know, procedure. Right. But so I asked the rep, who's installing this machine, the CT scanner, and he hands me a list of how do I build this? How can I get, you know, insurance to pay for this more, you know, appropriately, right? And he hands me a list of two different codes that I've never seen before in my entire life. And remember, this is at the end, this is close to 10 years of experience in all of this, you know, all of this field, you know, in particular, and I've never seen these codes. And I start looking into them, and they're medical codes, you know, they're diagnostic medical codes and procedure codes, right? And so now as a dental insurance expert, I know exactly what procedure codes are. Diagnosis codes, diagnostic codes does not apply to dental insurance at all. Just the dental insurance part of it, right? And so, but what they do apply to are medical codes. And so it turns out that the mouth is a part of the body. I don't know if you knew that, but eyes are too. Mouths and eyes, they're part of the body, right? They're affected by a lot of things, right? But somewhere along the line, eyes and mouths kind of got, you know, compartmentalized as not necessary, not essential. So that's why there's this eye insurance, right? You've got the, you know, eye insurance, you've got the dental insurance, and you've got the medical insurance. Well, let me just blow your mind real quick, but medical insurance is separate. Dental insurance and vision insurance are supplemental. That's what those kind of plans are. They're not insurance.
Right.
They are always meant to supplement from the medical insurance. Medical insurance is unlimited. You know, if you get into a catastrophic accident and you're on life support and it's like going to cost, you know, the hospital millions and millions of dollars, it doesn't really matter. It's medical insurance. It's there for a reason, but they've managed to convince dentists and, you know, ophthalmologists that they're not going to be reimbursed, not get paid by medical insurance because it's dental. Well, that's really just not true. And I took, you know, an amazing seminar and really kind of, you know, dove into the fact and wrote a couple papers on the fact, really, that, you know, that dental insurance is not what you need for most things, because most things that affect your mouth is let me say it this way. Periodontal disease. Do you know what periodontal disease is?
A medical, we lost you. A medical procedure. I've always, until you come back, I'm going to talk about how I thought it was. It's a question of billing.
You can't hear me? Can you hear me?
Now you're back. Now you're back.
Oh,
but
okay.
I thought it was delegated because of the land of specialties, because the doctor probably could do all the stuff in your mouth. He probably could. But
yeah.
You've got someone who's a specialist. Dentists are specialists, right? And they go back and forth between, I don't do that. That's like surgery. So we've got this special dental surgery. And, you know, then they went to the land of the same thing. And then everybody's branched off into their own specialty.
Right, but now seeing.
And if your insurance doesn't cover it, they bounce it back to, oh, that's the emergency room should have handled that. It's like it's just who's going to get paid the most.
Right.
It's
well, and that's this is what I'm saying. No, you can hear me now?
Yes, I can. Yeah.
So knowing what I know and running dental offices for a decade, right? I watched so many patients come through my office that could have been covered by medical insurance, but because dental offices are only set up to bill dental insurance. I told so many people over my, you know, the decade that I ran dental offices that no, medical insurance doesn't pay for dental. It just doesn't happen. Well, I was completely wrong, you know, and there's like, and I figured out how to do this. And so let me just tell a quick story about a patient.
Mm-hmm.
Can't obviously
Absolutely.
Name names, like, you know, but when I started to learn how to bill medical insurance, right? We had a patient who came in. I asked you earlier, periodontal disease. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Gum disease. Yep. Right.
I don't.
So,
doing very well, matter of fact.
Okay. So everybody has the bacteria in their mouths that cause gum disease, gum loss, periodontal disease, everybody. So why is it that some people can control it and other people can't? So this is the question that I posed in a paper, and really what, you know, I had a patient who came in who had, you know, established periodontal disease, you know, but she was coming in every 3 to 4 months, you know, we were getting it under control. Right. And then she came in for her recall appointment, her periodontal appointment, periodontal maintenance appointment. And we saw that her gum loss had gone from, you know, stable, not no change, to progressive, and she lost 2 teeth. Right.
Really?
So, right. And so I just learned how to do this diagnostic stuff. Right. And so I'm looking over her health history. Right. And I'm like, all right, well, what's changed? Anything? Are there any like big markers that I know now from this training could potentially cause, you know, tooth loss? And really, like, nothing got changed on the health history, but there was a note like on the side from the hygienist that cleaned her teeth and notified her that she had to have 2 teeth removed, that she had a previous mastectomy. And so So why would you have a mastectomy if you didn't have cancer, right? So I asked the patient, I said, did you have cancer? She said, yes. Did you have, you know, chemo and or radiation? Yes. So I know at that point in my career, knowing what I know now about billing medical insurance, the doctor listed it as a late effects code of cancer. That's like how you have to speak insurance. And it's a late effect of a previous and confirmed diagnosis of, say, cancer, right? So the only thing that had changed, and we know this stuff when, you know, through my 10 years of experience, when a patient came in and said, you know, I just had, you know, I was just diagnosed with cancer. I'm going to have chemo and radiation. We would sit them down and like get like a game plan together because we knew it was going to wreak havoc on their mouths, right? We were giving them tips on how to keep their mouths hydrated and, you know, reduce as much as we can the amount, the effects of what cancer and chemo and radiation is doing to their mouths. We know this stuff, right? So, I go to her medical insurance and I say that this is a late effects of, you know, obviously the doctor has to say this stuff. I'm just a, you know, basically a clerk, but I get the information from the doctor that says that, yes, this can happen, that, you know, this is a late effects. Because the only thing that had changed in that 3 to 4 months was the cancer and the chemo and the radiation. So we sign off on it as this is a late effects and we send it to the medical insurance, and within an hour I got a pre-authorization for like an $18,000 implant surgery. You know, it's really that dentists don't know this lingo. They don't know this kind of stuff, and you know, there really needs to be a re-education for the dentists and you know, eye doctors, so that they can start billing this insurance and not limit their patients, you know? Anyway, that's what I've got to say about that.
I just see, no, that's fantastic. I see that just, and then everyone knows I'm not a fan of our medical establishment and the way things are. And it's no difference anywhere you go, whatever little, you know, three-letter plaque you have in front of your name, you're following the new science. You know how we all love the new science because it's so beneficial for humanity. Safe and effective. You know, it's... oh, Lordy. And they're just all about making as much money for the powers that be. And the powers that be make all the money, and it through the this and that and whatever. And that is what they're learning in their universities. Because, you know, you've seen these viral videos of these young doctors who are just flabbergasted at what they're not learning in medical school. Because they happen to know that good health hinges upon nutrition, and never not once was anything mentioned. And it was almost as bad as the education system now in the little schools, the elementary schools and the high schools, and they are not being told the basics of how to read and write, and it's more of ideology and the new math. It's insane, and it's not beneficial, and it's just serves a certain purpose. That anything, if you're going to try to make a winning argument with me to say that the latest studies, we have the latest studies showing yada, yada, yada. I just look at you, and I have to, I'm like, how old are you? and you are so duped. You're just duped with this bullshit. And it goes everywhere. Even I'm going to say your mechanics, your young mechanics that rely upon diagnostic computers for everything, when I bet you that there are some of them that still kind of know that you can take a screwdriver and touch it to the voltage regulator or something similar. Because I had some brilliant man with a can of beer, screwdriver, and jumpstart my car one time. That was an older model and when I was younger. But who would
have thought? Yeah, but the newer models you can't really do that with.
But you know what? I bet there's stuff they can do similar type of trickeries of little inside trades that they know how to get this little thing started and going without the state-funded, approved dealer-sponsored computer that no one else can have but the dealer. You know, there are ways of getting around. There's a know-how. But once all the old guys are gone, and even the ones that know that there's an easy way. There's an easier way to do this. Just do this. They learned it in their I don't know. You know how the best things that have happened have been on accidents. Like what the hell is it? That one soap. There was a soap, Ivory soap. They fell asleep at the wheel when they were making the stuff in the factory, and it went longer and whatever. And it was the only soap that the bar soap floated in the water because they fucked up at the factory. And they're like, "Oh my God, look at this!" And it was a selling point for years and years and years. And now everybody wears, you know, does these bottle soaps and whatnot. But that was the magic of, you never know. Look at the greatest. That was the greatest thing in the world. Your soap floated instead of fell to the bottom of the tub. Boom. But these things happen. In the word of mouth, it's kind of like, hey, you don't have to do that. Do this. Have you ever been in a class when it's kind of like, oh, no, this is dope. It's easy, breezy. Do this. Boom. And it works. That happens everywhere. So mm-hmm. we lose that mindset of, I remember hearing this or whatever, and you just follow the, this is what the studies, and we only have, these are the studies we got from our drug reps or, you know, whatever. And even when this woman was reading me an insert, she did, as if I was, and she didn't do it like condescending, but she goes, she felt like she stumbled upon the answer to all of our problems. But she was only making it worse because them telling me that this is a almost the words of it, it was a court, it wasn't a court though, but it was, it is sanitized, it's approved. I'm like, by your medical mafia, you know, it's like, this is, you're
sure.
really bullshit. Just like, you know, McDonald's food is, it's good food. No, I'm not putting this in my body just because you're reading this off a piece of paper. Where did it come from? But I just, you know, I dropped it because I'm like, I knew everything comes from China. Of course, especially the little shined up sterilized bone you want to put in my, it's just a plug to put another, you know, it's a space.
You can get
it's
it from your own self.
I'm not, honey, do you know, I am not going through unnecessary surgery. Do you know how hard it is to find another piece of bone? Where are they going to put, no, they've taken enough bone.
No, it's
bone
very easy. They
jaw.
Can take it from, I think, your thigh or something. Like, you can be your own donor.
Perfect.
You can get your,
you're
what?
Crazy. No, I'm sorry. Love you. Love you to death.
Well,
but no.
I know, but I think it's better than taking it from Uyghurs,
no.
Don't you?
Honey, you know what? It looks just like a fucking sinus tablet from an allergy medicine or a Nicorette. It's like, it's there. It's like, just shut up, and if you don't like it. And
just,
you
I'm
know,
just giving you options. I'm
it's
saying
a,
if you don't want to take the, you know, the Uyghur
honey,
you know, bone,
oh,
I'm okay with that. I support that decision
bad.
For sure.
Will they be out of work if I don't do this?
Yeah, oh. You're definitely taking away from the Uyghur concentration camp budgets, I guess. But I'm just saying that if you really, if you want to have it done, you can take it from your own self and you don't have to displace any Uyghurs at all. But with that, Mom's here. Let's let Mom in. She's been on a mission
right.
today.
Well, let's listen to her. How you doing, Carla?
Hi. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good.
I'm glad to hear
it. Happy Sunday.
I'm excited because I just posted a picture on the Seeds of Change thread of the new eggs that I just went to Escondido and picked up. So they're going
to
be going
and she
in
had to,
incubator.
Like, basically, it was like the Oregon Trail to get back home.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, she took her, you know, four-wheel drive truck and you know, braved the open roads to go get, and I'm not even kidding, like it was all, you know, all of our roads are closed because of flooding and now fixing stuff from
right.
flooding, right? So, and then she got eggs, but we have just 10 minutes before the good news starts. So maybe we'll let the listeners in on the fact that our first batch did not take, which is really sad.
No, we had an incubator fail. Grandma,
you know what?
Mom, for, gosh, I think about 2 years now, because I just stopped doing it because it was just too much. And the little ones, when they're little, are really vulnerable, and they take a little bit of care. And so this year, because of the egg shortages, and that means chick shortages, I'm going to incubate. And so because I stopped, I got rid of my incubating equipment. I gave it to someone who needed it. And so somebody gave me a free one, right? And there was a reason why it was free. Somebody gave it to her, and then she gave it to me, and there was a reason why they did that, because none of the babies survived. And it was very sad, and I was super freaking bummed. So I went and I got myself a foolproof system, and they'll be going in the incubator today. So I'm excited about that. But
that's good.
Coming back was they closed down part of a major freeway here in Southern California. There was a sinkhole that was it was about car size. And I don't know how deep it was, but they shut down this one stretch of the freeway right by my house. It's a 78 feeder freeway, and it's a major freeway. Lots of people use it, and they're putting people onto surface streets for detours. And what a mess! And they said, okay, we're going to open it back up on March 20th, which would be tomorrow, but they lied. That sucker isn't going to be open for weeks. I can tell. Because when I was going the other way, there's no way. It's going to be weeks before they open it up. So anyway, getting back was a bit of a challenge, but I'm back and ready to do the good news report when it's
done. Okay. Maybe, what about this? Maybe you should, Frida's nest that we talked about, the one you just found?
Mm-hmm.
What if Frida's
what
still
if Frida's
broody? I call her Frida, but whatevs. What if you take?
So I asked her. I do have one that I think is thinking about it. She's going in the metal boxes, and I don't know if that's the right spot for her to do that. For me to put eggs in it, I don't know that I would trust her. She's one of the Morans that is. She's considering it. Shall we say, you can tell by the way that they make a different kind of noise when they are broody. They make this sort of distress when they only come out for food twice a day. And when they come out, they make this really distressed noise. So she's thinking about it, but Frida, Danielle, is not, she's not staying up in there. She's only laying her eggs in there, but that would be the spot, wouldn't it?
Right, so I'm saying if you put a couple of those eggs in there, maybe they'll hatch them.
She's not staying there. The one that Frida, our buddy, not staying in there. She's not broody.
Hmm. How
she's
many
only putting them,
do you have?
As many as the city of Carlsbad allows.
Yeah, as many as the city of Carlsbad says that I'm allowed to have.
I asked an old man who grows chickens, and he's making $500 a day off of his eggs. I was like, wow. So
yeah,
he says as long as you don't change the food, the only time he's not laid is when he's changed the food. As long as you got food, you got light, you got water, they will lay eggs. And I was like,
But
they will do their damnedest to hide them, too, if they think their babies are getting messed with.
Yeah. So it's not... Yeah, they're producing. I'm making about $60 a week, so they're paying for their feed. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. And I have, my production is really good. I'm getting about anywhere between 20 and 21 eggs a day, which is pretty good.
Well, that is good. So if they're so territorial and protective, Is there money in just letting them have their chicks and selling the chicks?
Yes, I'm going to be selling chicks this year.
So that
yeah, we've sold chicks in the past. It's nice. It's
yes.
fun.
Yeah. But I still think yeah. that the best way to do it is the incubator. And, of course, the natural process obviously is optimal, but there are problems with that because the other chickens will kill the baby. So you have
yeah,
to
when they're in a small
them.
Space, because right now we're redeveloping where the chickens can go. So right now they're not in a tiny space. It's not like, like a industrial farm or anything like that. But they're in a smaller space than I think right. that they feel comfortable in. So, we could do it as soon as we can get expanded to the backyard. But there's been a lot of weather and stuff this year. But I think we'll be able to do it. Get some broodies, and not have them eat the babies because they've got all the other land.
Yeah, so they have to be, but the broody and her chicks need to be separated because the other hen will kill them. So you have to be, you have something called a grow out. Separate out. Don't have that right now, as Deb just explaining. So in the incubator, and then I'll just put them in the brooder, and they'll be.
Yeah, and we've got an amazing space for chick, for baby chicks in the garage, like a professional done broody space, new chick, baby chick space. So that's good.
Yes. So anyway, so I'm back, and the last thing that I want to say is I almost didn't come on today, and I was whining to Danielle. I told her I'm sore, but I didn't. So today, you ever heard that sort of joke where the people say, yeah, you stepped on a pig? Well, I did. And I have about a quarter inch gash in my shin. And and we had revamped the entire run today. And so I was helping to do that. So I'm kind of whooped. So my good news report is going to be with me being sore and grumpy.
You got about another minute and a half of that, okay?
And then after that, it's over, right?
No, that's all good news.
It's all good news, yeah. I will survive. Okay.
That's good news.
I don't know what's going on in the background there. What's that about?
What, me?
No, maybe it's Elizabeth. I don't know. There's some background stuff going on. Anyway.
Well, I already blew it. My microphone didn't work at the beginning of the show. So, I assume all the problems today are me.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and start the good news because there is some good news. And it was the Twitter files number 19. Now, obviously, we have skipped a couple. Twitter files, but this one I thought that it was super important because guess what? The COVID stuff is coming out finally. I will tell you that Dr. Fauci, they got a hold of a bunch of his emails and stuff that was flying through Twitter. And this COVID thread, and I think there will be more, and I will be keeping an eye out for it. But this Twitter thread is pretty important because it talks about, and it's obvious we've all known the entire time that we were being censored on Twitter. And that's why Elon Musk bought the platform. It ramped up to a degree we have never seen when they censored a sitting president of the United States and millions of people off of Twitter. But during COVID in particular, it was crazy. So this was before they took down Donald Trump. But during the time of COVID and with all of the crazy, crazy stuff, they were basically making us play Twister, stand with one hand on your head, the other one on your nose, straddle the numbers, and and you won't get COVID. And it was all bullshit. And voices of people that were saying, hey, the stuff you're telling us to do doesn't make a lot of sense, were being silenced. Now, I came in when Elizabeth was talking about the doctors and the medical schools. She's absolutely right. But the really scary part about the censorship that happened during COVID was medical doctors and scientists and virologists and anyone who didn't toe the line was being censored, and they were not allowed to speak. Well, it turns out there are three organizations that helped the people that were running Twitter to find these stories and censor them. It was called Stanford University, the Virality Project, the Virality Project. Okay, so Stanford University ran something called the Virality, V-I-R-A-L-I-T-Y. In other words, when something is going to go viral, Stanford stepped in and was in charge of making sure that these stories were not seen, and or these tweets or these posts. And Stanford University is obviously a well-respected university here in the United States, and the fact that they were engaging in censorship and handing over people's tweets to Twitter to be censored makes me sick. Files number 19 by Matt Taibbi again. The great COVID-19 lie machine, Stanford, the Virality Project, and the censorship of true stories. And he's got true stories in quotes. The release of Dr. Anthony Fauci's spring 2020 emails has been used to exacerbate distrust in Dr. Fauci. Increased distrust in Fauci's expert guidance. That's how they start this. The key takeaways is that the release of Dr. Anthony Fauci's emails, okay, so keep in mind, there were a trench of his emails released, and we didn't get to see them because they were censored and removed from the public square. And the Virality Project at Stanford was in charge of taking down these posts that talked about Anthony Fauci's emails, and which was quote-unquote causing distrust of Anthony Fauci, who's, remember, because he's the science, right? And we can't have that. It says reports of vaccinated individuals contracting COVID-19 anyway, natural immunity, suggesting COVID-19 leaked from a lab, even worrisome jokes were part of the things that the Virality Project flagged for Twitter to take down. All of these were characterized as potential violations or disinformation events by the Virality Project, a sweeping cross-platform effort. So keep in mind, it wasn't just Twitter. It was Facebook. It was Google. It was Instagram. All of these, every time the Virality Project pointed out something, it was flagged on all of those, all of those platforms. A sweeping cross-platform effort to monitor billions of social media posts by Stanford University, federal agencies, and a slew of often state NGOs, that means non-governmental organizations. Just before Schellenberger, MD, and I testified in the House last week, Virality Project emails were found in the Twitter files, here we go, describing stories of true vaccine side effects as actionable content. So when people started complaining about vaccine side effects, Stanford University was flagging that stuff. We've since learned the Virality Project in 2021 worked with government to launch a pan-industry monitoring plan for COVID-19 related content. At least six major internet platforms were onboarded to the same JIRA ticketing system, daily sending millions of items for review, millions of posts. So to one of my things that I say very, very often, it never really seems like we're being heard. It never really seems like anything's being done. And the reason for that is because we're being censored. Our speech is, even though it's true and it's important, and it's not just Twitter, it's all the platforms. At least 6 major internet platforms were onboarded to the same JIRA government website, government system, sending millions of items for review. So the Virality Project reviewed content on a mass scale for Twitter, Google, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Medium, TikTok, and Pinterest, knowingly targeted true material and legitimate political opinions while often being factually wrong itself. This was also important. If you remember the Twister analogy that I used, they put yellow tape around playgrounds. They poured millions of tons of sand into skateboard parks. They closed beaches. And we kept telling them, this sounds kind of crazy. Well, no one heard our voice because it was censored. excuse me. This story is important for 2 reasons. And I'm going back to Matt Taibbi again. One, as Orwellian proof of concept, the Virality Project was a smash success. Government, academia, and an oligopoly, oligopoly of would-be corporate competitors organized quickly behind a secret unified effort to control political messaging. 2, it accelerated the evolution of digital censorship, moving it from judging truth, untruth, to a new, scarier model, openly focused on political narratives at the expense of fact. The beginning, on February 5th, 2021, just after Joe Biden took office, Stanford wrote to Twitter to discuss the Virality Project. By the 17th, Twitter agreed to join and got its first weekly report on anti-vax disinformation, which contained numerous true stories. February 22nd, 2021, Stanford welcomed Twitter veterans like Yoel Roth and Brian Clark, instructing them on how to join the group JIRA system, a government agency. You can watch the friendly welcome video here. We're not going to watch the video, but in March of 2021, we're beginning to ramp up our notification process to platforms in addition to the top 7 platforms. The Virality Project soon gained visibility to alternative platforms such as Gab, Parler, Telegram, and Getter. Near total surveillance of the social media landscape. So it's not just Twitter.
Oh, yeah. I've known that for a long time.
Through July of 2020, Twitter's internal guidance on COVID-19 required a story to be demonstrably false or contain an assertion of fact to be actioned. But the Virality Project, in partnership with the CDC, pushed different standards. Virality Project told Twitter that true stories that could fuel hesitancy, including things like celebrity deaths after vaccine or the closure of a central New York school due to reports of post-vaccine illness, should be considered standard vaccine misinformation on your platform. They shut it all down. Everybody that was trying to ask questions, get information, tell other people what they're noticing, those were shut down too. In one email to Twitter, Virality Project addressed what it called the vaccine passport narrative, saying concerns over such programs have driven a larger anti-vaccination narrative about the loss of rights and freedoms. This was framed as misinformation, a misinformation event. Virality Project routinely framed real testimonials about side effects as misinformation, from true stories of blood clots from AstraZeneca vaccines to a New York Times story about vaccine recipients who contracted the blood disorder, thrombocytopenia. That's, Danielle, is that, do you, have you heard that one?
Thrombocytopenia.
Thrombocytopenia. Topenia, T-O-P-E-N-I-A.
That, I believe, is some sort of, an attack on, hold on, thrombo. There it is. Low levels of platelets.
Oh, Lord.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Most commonly, coagulation disorders from, right? So we're talking about strokes,
mm-hmm.
right? And coagulation
stroke,
issues. That would be one of them.
Do you remember the German doctor that came out and videotaped all of the blood slides of all of her patients?
Yes.
She was a phlebotomist. And
I do.
It was turning from the tiny, beautiful little bubbles of what your blood's supposed to look like to these blobs of pancake batter with, like, razor lines. And she had never in her life seen anything like that and was scared to death. That's what that
it
is.
Was, it was terrifying.
They gave it a name. That's
and
their name for it.
Elizabeth, to take this vaccine because they were not getting the information that they needed to make an informed decision.
Yeah, and we just heard
that,
from the Twitter files that that's what happened. They suspended, suppressed that information, even if it was true. Oh, God, you know, my neck and my arm has been sore for months. Even that kind of stuff was just suppressed because of the power these companies have. And, you know, and if people could have made, and I believe that the study that Mom is referencing is saying basically being sent to Twitter and other platforms saying that, you know, people can't really make appropriate decisions. And so we need to censor any kind of, you know, backlash, any kind of objection, any kind of, you know, proof in the other direction at all. And they got really good at doing that during COVID, right?
Yeah,
they did. You know, I get very bored of listening to this stuff, but this is fantastic because there are lawsuits that are going on right now.
Yeah.
And they're equating the doctors in white coats to murderers. And if they were wearing hoodies, it would be a different, whole different story. But this is wonderful for the, what do they call it? Exhibit A? Exhibit B?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is premeditated
A right
murder.
Here.
And remember, there's still a multi-state lawsuit going on, proving with evidence this is precisely what's going on. The Twitter files is just more evidence. So let's go back to the good news because I really want to get to this because it really does. It just bolsters. It validates what we've been saying and shows that they try to suppress any kind of knowledge of this. So, all right, go ahead.
Okay. By March of 2021, Twitter personnel were aping virality project language, describing campaigns against vaccine passports, fear of mandatory immunizations, and misuse of official reporting tools as potential violations. So this is where they really locked it down on us. This echoed a report to Twitter by the Global Engagement Center. Here we go. Global Engagement Center is already Russia-linked accounts, right? So this is what they did. They were saying they were doing this about COVID, but they were doing it to everyone. It was a political tool, not a medical tool. Legitimate and actual COVID-19 updates. It posts content that attacks Italian politicians, the EU, and the United States. So here we go. This person is talking about real COVID stuff, but it's probably Russian link because they attack content about Italian politicians, the European Union, and the United States. So this is where they took it to another level, even as nasty as what we're already talking about. Now, if someone talks about COVID and talks about politics, they're getting their account taken down too. That same GEC report, which is called, again, I'll go back to the Global Engagement Center, another think tank like the Project Virality report found in the Twitter files, identified former Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte and former Italian Democratic Party Secretary Nicola Zingaretti, who's been compared to Bernie Sanders, as highly connected accounts in a Russian-linked network. And so if they can't get us with COVID, they're going to get us with Russia, right? The virology
they're sure not.
Right? The gauging of disinformation by audience response. If the post-vaccine death of a black woman named Dreen Keys in Virginia went unnoticed, inspired mostly anti-vaccine comments on local media, it became a disinformation event. So people point out that someone, a young black woman, passes away, say, probably was she vaxxed? Ask the question, was she vaxxed? They take that down, too.
Yeah, that's why I came up with Papers, Please. I knew that.
Yes, I know.
That's the whole hashtag Papers, Please, was just to get around this algorithm.
Yes. VP warned against people just asking questions. Virality Project warned Twitter against people, get that, listen to that, just asking questions, implying it was a tactic commonly used by spreaders of misinformation. It also described a worldwide rally for freedom planned over Telegram as a disinformation event. Almost always reportable, it encouraged platforms to target people, not hosts, using Minority Report-style pre-crime logic, describing repeat offenders like Robert Kennedy Jr. It spoke of large volume of content that is almost always reportable, and reportable means it's getting taken down. Virality Project was repeatedly, extravagantly wrong. In one email to Twitter on misinformation, it spoke of wanting to hone in on an increasingly popular narrative about natural immunity.
Assholes.
The Virality Project in April 2021 mistakenly described breakthrough infections as extremely rare events that should not be inferred to mean vaccines are ineffective. Later, when the CDC changed its methodology for counting COVID-19 cases among vaccinated people, only counting those resulting in hospitalization or death, Virality Project complained that the anti-vaccine accounts of RFK Jr. and What's-Her-Face retweeted the story to suggest hypocrisy. Guess who got
right, right. This is big anti-vax, you know, coming up, stepping up, right? Like, that's what this is going.
Yes.
That's what they're going to, big anti-vax. You know, they've got the money to do this kind of stuff, right?
Right. A few months later, a post, breakthrough cases are happening. Okay? We knew that. Turns out the freaking vaccine didn't work at all and caused all kinds of side effects. In a chilling irony, the VP ran searches for the term surveillance state. Here we go with the politics. As an unaccountable state partner bureaucracy secretly searching it out, the idea that vaccines are part of a surveillance state won its own thought crime bucket conspiracy. After about a year, on April 26, 2022, the Virality Project issued a report calling for a rumor control mechanism to address nationally trending narratives and a misinformation and disinformation center of excellence to be housed within CISA at the Department of Homeland Security. These people are tyrants. The next day, April 27, 2022, DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas announced in a House Appropriations Subcommittee hearing that a disinformation governance board had been created to be headed by the singing censor, Nina Jankowicz. Even in its final report, the VP claimed, VP Virology Project claimed it was misinformation to suggest the vaccine does not prevent transmission, or that governments are planning to introduce vaccine passports. Both things turned out to be true. The final tweet, the Virology Project was specifically not based on assertions of fact, but public submission to authority, acceptance of narrative, and pronouncements by figures like Anthony Fauci. The project's central animating concept was, you can't handle the truth. One of its four, oh, I guess there are more. My goodness, this thread goes on for a while. Know that. Do I have time, Danielle?
Yeah, you've got the whole hour.
Okay. For goodness sakes. So we're still continuing with the Virology Project. And this is where he takes it, where the stuff that they were stifling and censoring, which we know it was all true, and the crap that they put forward and allowed to be, it was garbage. The Virology Project was specifically not based on assertions of fact, but public submission to authority. Okay, so I read that one. One of its four core partners, Pentagon-funded, Graphica, explained in a report about Fauci, Fauxi, because we thought it was because the public cannot be trusted to make judgments. Here it is, Danielle. The public cannot be trusted to make judgments on its own. It must be shielded from truths that might undermine its faith in authority.
Sorry, I guess that was a spoiler alert.
And you freaking people?
Those are dangerous thoughts. They're so good to us. Oh, my God.
So this
and,
is
of course,
from – this is a
for the benefit
from,
of our stockholders, too.
Remember, it's a Pentagon-funded – the fucking Pentagon, for God's sake.
The Pentagon has lost at least more than $21 trillion just in unaccounted for budgets, you know? Yeah.
So part
what are they funding?
Listen to this.
They're up to no good, babe. They deserve to be bound.
Quotes from one of their reports. The continual process of seeding doubt and uncertainty in authoritative voices, Graphica wrote in a report sent to Twitter, leads to a society that finds it too challenging to identify what's true or false. They want to do our thinking for us.
Yes,
you know,
they do.
I got to tell you.
As the education system, yeah. It's the latest thing.
I have to make an admission here. I stopped a few tweets back a few days ago when I posted this to our website, to our chat.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even see the whole thread. This stuff is getting really nasty.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So this is the Pentagon with a shield called Graphica. Graphica is spelled G-R-A-P-H-I-K-A. Okay, sounds really trendy and cool, right? The freaking
mm-hmm.
Pentagon. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep reading. Because we're us poor folks are so dumb, and we need to be spoon-fed information, and we can't see stuff that they don't want us to see. Listen to this. For this reason, the CDC partnered project focused often on disinformation events, including Fauci, saying the release of Fauci's emails foments distrust and deriding assertions he misled the public. No shit. A Cleveland Clinic study showed previous infection offered the same immunity as the vaccine. My God. But the Virology Project said discovery was subservient to narrative. What do you think that means? Let me read that again. A Cleveland Clinic study showed previous infection offered the same immunity as the vaccine. But Virology Project said discovery was subservient to narrative. Listen to this. Whether or not scientific consensus is changing, natural immunity is a key narrative among anti-vaccine activists, so therefore it must be silenced.
That's
you
not
remember,
the narrative.
Danielle, when when that started happening, when we were talking, you and I were talking about people with natural immunity.
Yes.
And you remember how it got stomped on Facebook?
Yes.
I think I got a ban for the first time on Facebook over that.
Well, I know back then I was getting attacked by big pharma trolls. They were just coming out immediate blah 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 blah.
And they're so fun. You can just totally tell. I don't know. I don't know if you guys can.
Oh,
although
yeah.
I was alerted recently to one of my favorite people on Facebook is actually, a troll account for another Facebook friend that I love. I hate when that happens, when I think that it's somebody else, but it's, you know. Ugh.
Right.
So here it is. Yeah. This is where they admit. The Virality Project communications mirror those produced in recent court case in Louisiana versus Biden. That's the case we were talking about. It's those three states that went after Biden, which shows Facebook admitting to the WHO, the World Health Organization, that it too was censoring true content, stuff like natural immunity. From the start, Stanford explained the Virality Project would essentially continue the work of the 2020 Election Integrity Partnership. The same Jira system from the EIP is up and running, they wrote. In the last Twitter Files thread, we posted a video of EIP Director Alex Stamos describing that project as Stanford trying to fill the gap of things the government couldn't do legally. Talk about evidence. We also showed video in which Stamos introduced EIP Research Director Renee DeRosetta as having worked for the CIA. By October 2020, Stamos was hinting at the direction of the future Virality Project, telling a national cybersecurity conference that the anti-disinformation mission needed a new focus. That's when they started going after election integrity stuff. We talk way too much.
During the time that they were actively trying to push their narrative and stop out the real doctors who were talking about immunity, natural immunity, they destroyed all of these credible doctors and they put them on the disinformation dozen, the most dangerous people in the world that were professionals in their field were talking against this government narrative, and they must be silenced. And they were. Dr. Judy Gold, there's a whole slew of doctors everywhere that were talking about this, and the government just went on a full-out assassination program.
You're right.
Go ahead, Mom. Sorry.
Yeah. No, but this is important. So this Stamos guy says, we talk way too much about foreign, it's a little bit Cold War-y, Stamos said, as the vast majority of problems were now domestic. We have like an 80-20 breakdown. I think that needs to be flipped. So when they way back in the Bush administration, when 9/11 happened and they put in the Homeland Security business, and they put in the FISA court, remember that? They said anything foreign coming into the country, we're going to grab it, we're going to collect it, but we're not going to monitor American citizens. Okay? This guy is...
Fingers crossed behind back. Sorry.
At the cybersecurity summit says we're going to start, now it's mostly domestic, and we want to do that now. Even though it's totally against what the surveillance state was supposed to do. VP's partners, Department of Defense funded Graphica, the National Foundation funded Center for an Informed Public. Listen to all these garbage. The GEC funded DFR Lab and the NYU Center for Social Media and Politics, or CSMAP. BP would later say it partnered with several government agencies, including the Office of the Surgeon General and the CDC. It reportedly also worked with DHS's CISA, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and GEC, among others. To recap, America's information mission went from counterterrorism abroad to stopping foreign interference from reaching domestic audiences to 80% domestic content, much of it true. The Disinformation Government Board is out, but truth policing is not. Special thanks to a bunch of folks that helped gather this stuff. One of my very favorite anons, Technofog, helped them go through this information to get Twitter files number 19.
And Aaron Mattei.
Technofog, Schellenberger, Berger, these are the people that helped them, Aaron Mattei, and Racket News Team, Mike Benz Cyber. So those are all the people that helped him with Twitter files number 19, which that's an all-star panel of folks. And I really, really appreciate that one. And so what's the good news about this? The good news is they cannot keep a lid on this anymore. And
they're
also,
trying to.
They're trying to, yes. But the truth is that all of those voices, that why isn't anybody saying anything? Why aren't people talking about this? Why can't? It's because they haven't let us. But
exactly.
From-
it's crazy. You know, there are more TikTok videos going around right now of real people calling out the reason that the government thinks that TikTok is bad and needs to be banned is because it's the only platform left that is not being controlled by the government, and therefore it's very dangerous because we're saying things that are true and the government can't interject. It's incredible.
Yes. All right. So thank you. I want you guys to have a great week. I'm going to nurse my ankle, and let's see, I also got bit by some hardware cloth today. My back is sore, my shoulder's sore, and but I'll be back next week to give you guys more wonderful information. Twitter files number 19 was badass. I think it's my favorite so far. I've been waiting for it for a long time. And any questions before I go?
I think I'm good. Elizabeth?
Okay.
Oh, I'm amazed at, you know, the fact that here all of this is coming out. And are they using strong arm of the government to poo-poo all of these Twitter files?
Yeah, like
come
all
back
of
and,
the alphabet.
Retaliation?
Yes, they are. They just testified on Capitol Hill, and that was before Twitter files number 19, but a lot of stuff came out at that hearing. I mean, of course, the Democrats tried to do their same bullshit stuff that they do. But what I think the way that it's going to end is that case still from Louisiana. And every time they do another Twitter files, the case in Louisiana gets stronger and stronger. They're going to be stopped. I guarantee it. It's going to happen. We are on the precipice.
Amen.
Well, Anto, I'd like to
the genie is out of the bottle.
It looks like the president is going to get arrested on Tuesday.
I'm glad you brought that up. What do you think about this? I was driving out to the dentist Saturday morning, and I don't have the TV, so I don't get the TV news. So the first story on the AM radio news was that President Trump has announced that he will probably be arrested on Tuesday, and Putin is going to be has a warrant out for his arrest. And then they went on to the weather, and I'm just like, this is like some clown world. I'm like, what is going on? What do you think about this?
So I think that they want Donald Trump to run, and that's why they're doing this. The problem is, Donald, if they do arrest him, Donald Trump will win in a landslide. So the case against him is super, super weak. And it's bullshit. And everyone knows it's bullshit. If they have something on Donald Trump, he's the most investigated human on the planet. If they had something on Donald Trump, they would have brought it many years ago. This is a gambit because he's running for president. And I don't know. It's kind of weird. Many people think that they want him to run because they already beat him once, supposedly, ostensibly. The case against him is about the hush money, a campaign, supposedly misuse of campaign funds that is a misdemeanor that supposedly they're turning into a felony so that they can perp walk him.
Well, they didn't really, really need that picture.
Yeah, they
Bill
really
Clinton
need the picture.
Did the very same thing and never, you know, it was a scandal, but the FBI didn't get involved. It's
millions
fascinating.
Get ethics violations and minimally charge, or thousands, I'll say, with campaign contribution issues. They're throwaway cases. So I don't know what they're doing.
And they still ignore, you know, who the big guy is.
With a sign, and I'm going to protest because my president asked me to. So that's what I'm going to do. Sorry, Nala.
To hang a sign? Is that what he said?
Yeah, I'm going to go hold a sign and protest because my president asked me to, and I'm going to.
Well, there
all right,
it is.
Guys, you have a wonderful day. All right?
All right. Love you.
All right. Enjoy your chicken.
Bye-bye. Okay, thanks. Bye.
She's got babies. She's got hatchlings to focus on right now.
Yeah.
John Michael, I think I see you. Press one if that's you.
Hey, John.
Hi.
Hi, John Michael.
Hi, everyone.
John Michael. How are you, sweetie pie? Happy Sunday.
I'm good. How are y'all doing?
Doing awesome.
Is it raining where y'all are at? Because it's raining here again.
A tiny, tiny bit.
Oh,
yeah.
It's
been raining here a lot. Like, our water reservoirs are at, like, 97% capacity or something like that.
Oh, that's good news.
Yes, it is good news because there's always a drought. So there's always a drought and, you know, they always have water restrictions and such. So now we have water, which we haven't had in a while.
Hallelujah. I'm going to go step away for a second. You guys continue.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
How are you going to act with all of that water? My gosh. What are they going to pull out of their bag of tricks to make this a crisis, the never-ending crisis of droughts and floods and, oh, my, crazy, craziness. Where are you, in the middle of the state? The top or the bottom?
Yes, I'm in Bakersfield. Yeah, Bakersfield area.
Middle?
It's like an hour north of LA.
You're not helping.
It's like an hour.
Are you in I'm looking at the state. I'm looking at the top, the middle, or the bottom.
The middle. The middle for sure. But
okay.
More towards the bottom than the top.
There we go. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Cool. And it's raining.
It's raining again. It's been raining a lot.
It's great. I saw my first robin of the year came and flew into my tree. So it's officially spring, and it's gorgeous. The sun is shining. The sky is blue. Real chilly. Hey, baby. And
oh, wow.
Fantastic day in Chicago.
Yes.
Hey, baby.
So what are we all discussing
so,
before I came on? I didn't get a chance to really listen to too much.
Well, we were talking about my little visit to the dentist and the old and the new ways of doing things, medically speaking.
Yeah. And then the Twitter files.
Yes. And then the government's cover-up Yeah, they have to be exhausted from the constant, you know, trying to pull us away from what we're learning, what they're doing. I'm wondering, like, how soon after the Twitter files came to be in the investigation did the new crisis, the bank failure, try to pull us away from that? And then from the, oh, wasn't of the slew of all of these documents that they're finding all over the place, and the never any corruption of the Biden family.
I'm sure it's related.
Under the, you know, it's all been swept away with this crazy, you know, the Stormy Daniels. I'm trying to think of, oh, it was Jennifer Flowers. Jennifer Flowers was Bill's little hush money. I think he gave her like $185,000 to go away so she didn't cause a scandal in his election cycle back in the day. But that wasn't a federal crime.
But this
insane.
Isn't a federal crime either.
It's not, but they're acting as if it is. You know, it's like
true.
Is it? Was it not a federal crime because he was Arkansas governor at the time? Is that why it wasn't federal crime and it happened in Arkansas, right?
Oh, I don't know. I think it might have been just it was the 80s and it was just a whole different world back then.
yeah, that's
it was a tragedy, you know. Either they slunked away in shame, or they were bulletproof and they didn't care. There were very few of them, and that's one of the things that we kind of liked about Bill Clinton back in the day, because we used to like him before we learned about how nefariously dangerous and corrupt he was. Was that he? It just rolled right off him. He's got better things to do.
True.
I got a vision, you know. And now
true.
You can't even think the wrong thoughts without being canceled. Did you see, I'm totally shifting gears here, did you see Jamie Lee Curtis in her Oscar acceptance speech? I saw a few of these things rolling through. And she was on the doing a live thing for, like, I guess the Golden Globes or somebody, or SAG, and it was a live question and answer throughout the world. People were giving her questions, and she just won the Oscar. And she was making a joke, and she actually has a great sense of humor, and was making fun of the cancel culture kind of thing, and then all of a sudden realized that she fucked up. She actually made a funny, insulting, and it was funny. This is what, you know, humor used to be. And then she realized she tried to backpedal a little bit. She just kept saying as sincerely as possible, please don't cancel me, please. And if you're going to cancel me tomorrow. Let me enjoy this moment now. But she's like, please, please don't cancel me. And I just thought to myself, honey, you know what? You have been living the life of succumbing to this animal, this great beast of wokeism, of political correctness. It's not going. You're not going to be saved from. You know, you've been sacrificed. You're gone because she's totally offended everybody. But it was funny,
right?
But it was kind of like there will be, and I haven't. I've been waiting for the backlash, but I haven't seen that. You know, because they only put, you know, select whatever through you. Every one of us has boring feeds. We're not getting what it used to be. So it's kind of selectively, you really don't know what the hell's going on in the world until maybe they want to use that as a big distraction for something else. As Jamie Lee Curtis has been canceled because she spoke out against married women and blah, 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 and tried to cover it up. You know, she tried to backpedal with the, I am the mother of a trans daughter, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, we're crucifying you publicly because, you know, whatever the next scandal is that they don't want us to pay attention to.
Mm. Right.
It's crazy. It's craziness. Crazy world. So when it's clown world. And I was a little worried about Putin for a minute, because when they put out this big story that the international community has issued an arrest warrant for him for crimes against humanity. And what he did was they made it sound like he was trafficking children from Ukraine into Russia, like he was selling them into white slavery or something. And
Oh, come on. They always accuse of what they're doing.
Exactly. It's a big game of I'm rubber, you're glue is what's going on, because it's like, wait a minute. Don't you see what – no, it is. It's like it's clown world backwards bullshit. But I thought, oh, my God, they're doing a Gaddafi on him. He'll be gone pretty soon. And then the next day it was the arresting Trump, too, and I'm like, this is just too weird.
Okay.
It's almost like
– all right. So let me play a video. This is the first video of the day. Aujourd'hui. But this is really graceful. You guys probably both know really graceful YouTube channel, but talking about Trump and getting arrested. So this is just about 10 minutes. So if you guys are ready.
Cool.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Hey, Internet friends. Former President Donald Trump announced today that he is being arrested on Tuesday. I was working on a DuPont video, but the Ides of March have presented us with a mega psyop, so I hit pause on DuPont because I kind of wanted to get out ahead of the absolute orchestrated drama. I'll be honest, I had to double-check the calendar and make sure that Tuesday wasn't Yale Skull and Bones Day 322, because you know they love their number coding and their symbolism, but no, Tuesday is actually 321, the final countdown, if you will.
This is the final battle. They know it. I know it. You know it. Everybody knows it. This is it.
We are learning that the Manhattan DA's office has asked for a meeting with law enforcement ahead of a potential Trump indictment.
Okay, so Trump posted on Truth Social this morning in all caps, which I always read as someone yelling at me, quote, "Now illegal leaks from a corrupt and highly political Manhattan District Attorney's office, which has allowed new records to be set in violent crime and whose leader is funded by George Soros, indicate that with no crime being able to be proven and based on an old and fully debunked by numerous other prosecutors fairy tale, the far and away leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States of America will be arrested on Tuesday of next week. Protest. Take our nation back." End quote. So to wrap all that up, Trump is saying he expects to be arrested on Tuesday and that his followers should protest. Man, oh man, these bread and circuses really do deliver, don't they? I have several scenarios playing out in my head, a lot of thoughts. I actually got a full night of sleep last night. I'm properly caffeinated. I didn't write this out. I'm just going to fire from the hip, okay? So here we go. It's interesting because this arrest announcement comes at the same time as Putin's arrest warrant. And listen, if you arrest Trump and you make him a martyr in the eyes of his followers, it'll probably have the opposite effect of criminalizing him, and his support will just double down and will set him up for a victory in the 2024 election, possibly giving him an edge over DeSantis. Because what has DeSantis done? Has he been cuffed in the streets of New York City for your alleged rights and making America great again? Not the last time I checked. Has DeSantis suffered? No, not enough. Arresting your political opponents is just such a wild move. I really should have put that on my bingo card. Such a missed opportunity. Though I will say, like, from the perspective that you believe everything at face value and you do little to no critical thinking beyond what you're just told, the calls for protest don't really make a lot of sense to me, because it's not like Donald Trump went to bat for those who were arrested in the wake of January 6th. And this is going to make a lot of my followers mad, but it's just my observation, okay? He seemed kind of busy reminding everybody that he was responsible for the vaccine and Operation Warp Speed, and that it was great, the greatest vaccine ever, when it really wasn't a vaccine at all. It had minimal trials and is more appropriately described as gene therapy. But I digress. It seems like if you were to show up and protest for Trump, that given the context of January 6th, you're walking straight into a trap. It's kind of, what do they call it, a catch-22. You don't show up and protest, you lose. You show up and protest, you also lose. But remember, don't forget, back when BLM was protesting and the World Health Organization and media absolutely insisted that while people with no symptoms asymptomatic, remember, could spread COVID, and therefore you should let your grandma die in the hospital alone. The BLM protesters absolutely were not contributing to the spread of COVID, according to the media. And you got to ask yourself, is any politician worth getting arrested for? Are you able to make America great again if you're trying to get an arrest scrubbed off your criminal record? I really can't answer that for you. I can only ask the question. But let's talk about the taboo. Let's expand on January 6th for a minute. Because everyone dances around it and they'll censor you for talking about it. But if you're one of those YouTube employees watching this video, I just want you to ask yourself. I want you to think about the last generation in America who grew up with hope for their country. What generation, in your opinion, was the last one to believe that the future was hopeful, that pretty much anything was possible in our once prosperous nation? And listen, if you're that YouTube employee, we all know, be honest with yourself, we all know that 81 million people, or however many, didn't vote for Biden. Your guy might have won, but you still know it. You know it, just like I do. Selected, not elected. And in my book, The Deep State Encyclopedia, I talk about how effective the media was in the aftermath of January 6th. I've got the page open right here. They were incredibly effective at silencing dissent and any lingering questions by the use of divisive labels and character smears. Anyone who didn't denounce the January 6th attacks, I'm doing air quotes around the word attacks, were enemies of the nation. They were fascist, racist, Nazis, the alt-right. Thus, any claims of election fraud and calls for investigations of such fizzled out because individuals didn't want to be perceived as siding with the protesters. So that's me reading the book, but there were some people from my town who I heard went to these protests, and when they returned, the FBI investigated them. But where are these alphabet agencies when it really matters? Like, what about the Las Vegas attacks? What about our corrupt elections? What about the clients on Jeffrey Epstein's list? Who's blackmailing who and for what purpose? The silence on these issues is deafening. Our food is poison. Our air is poison. Our medicine, it's poison. Our water, also poison. We're being attacked in every way, shape, and form possible as citizens of this country. We're psyoped into oblivion because these physical wounds, they heal after a time, but the mental ones, they don't. Hijacked planes, school shootings, falling towers. How many can I list off? We're constantly being divided, manipulated, and lied to. They pit us against each other. They want us to hate our neighbors. They want us to hate ourselves. And I imagine it's because we outnumber them. What if one day we all just collectively said, no, enough is enough? And if I thought for even a second that protesting Trump's arrest would help us in any way, I'd say so. But it just looks like another opportunity to silence real dissent, pawns on the global stage, exit stage left, exit stage right. Oh, we're doing the public arrest now? Let's make sure the lighting is good. Don't get me wrong. I don't dislike Trump. He's just one person. I was very much all about his promises in the beginning, like when he said he was going to drain the swamp and all the creatures in it. And remember when he told Hillary Clinton to her face that he'd have her arrested? That was just such a good show. I was on board. But then he didn't do any of that, and he doubled down on the vaccine. So there's also this angle that I really can't get out of my head in regards to fulfillment of prophecy of this whole Ingersoll Lockwood Last President book, which may be editing grace. If you're listening to this, I'll roll the clip for this after. I don't know, but maybe I'll just link the video. Not sure. Ingersoll Lockwood's book, 1900, The Last President, is set on a Tuesday in November. He describes it as, quote, a terrible night for the great city of New York, end quote. And basically, Americans are protesting corrupt election results in the president's hometown of New York City, and it depicts the collapse of the republic. Anarchists and socialists laid siege to a hotel on Fifth Avenue screaming, death to the rich man. Then there's this whole thing about the North and South becoming divided, and they fight each other, and it's a whole civil war scenario. Lockwood's previous books have a character named Baron Trump who lives at Castle Trump, and it follows his adventures, and these were all written in the late 1800s. I expand more on these books in the Deep State Encyclopedia, but I can't help but think of these parallels as we see these scenarios playing out. And I'm also wondering, final question, what are we being distracted from? I'm wondering what will be happening on Tuesday while we're all looking at Trump. It's the sleight of hand magician's trick when you're watching one hand doing all the stuff while the other hand does something else to fool you. So I'm curious to know what y'all think. I'm sorry if you've heard constant plane noise overhead. I swear I live under a flight path and I don't have a recording studio. Like, I'm just sitting at my kitchen table recording this. So I want to know what y'all think. You know, I always look forward to reading your comments. Thank you so much for watching, subscribing, and supporting my channel on Patreon. Also, thank you for supporting my channel through buying my new book that came out last week. I really appreciate it. Bye.
Bravo. Bravo for...
Yeah, I think that pretty much nails it. John, Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, she hit a lot of stuff right on the head, especially the part about hating our neighbors. They want us to hate our neighbors. That's so true. It's very, very insightful of her to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not, I don't like Trump either, but I think it's interesting some of the way things are going the way that they are, but, you know, sorry to mean to cut you off.
That's fine. You don't have to like him. The more I see them, the less I like him. I still love him so much. And I tell you what, with this story, because they did change it. They changed the sound bites. The first story was, you know, that Trump released on his Truth Social that he was going to be arrested on Tuesday, and that his followers, his people, need the American people need to rally. And I'm just like, we did that already. Not I stand on the couch and I watched it on CNN. But they already did this for you. You didn't bring in the military. You didn't stop this fraudulent election like you should have and could have. No. And all
he
these people were,
tried.
Were rounded up.
You know, he had several – he called in the National Guard several times and it was denied, right?
You know what? He could have done much better. But we'll talk about that on another show. But the people that came to his little rally are now turned into domestic terrorists, are living in squalor, worse than Gitmo, with no hopes of ever getting out or even going to trial, for God's sakes. The one little woman in Congress has been there twice and done a few videos. They're not even getting... This is not America. This is not the American legal system. And they only went to a Trump rally, for fuck's sake. And now he wants us to do it again. I was like, what kind of setup bullshit is this? I'm like, is he being bait? I'm like, you know, this is a game show that I'm not going to play. And I just rolled my eyes at the story. And I'm like,
I can't trust him.
Especially with the vaccine thing they did. And whether he wittingly, he just was too unaware of how the medical establishment and Big Pharma works. Maybe he thought he was doing his patriotic duty. But once the medical establishment, I'm sure somebody reached out to him, but it didn't get anywhere. He was going to have Bobby Kennedy on board, and Bill Gates talked him off of it. And then we didn't get any real voices in on this operation, warp speed thing that went through. I don't know. I've just lost so much admiration for him. And I'm just like, are you trying to set up all these patriotic people? Do you have enough prisons ready for us that you're just trying to do this big, you know, cast out this net for crazy people? And we've got, you know, we've got half of them already, and we don't need you in our society causing trouble. And I'm like, oh, my God, what are they doing to us? That's what I thought when I heard the news story. So I really like her. Now she's now my number one favorite because she's smart. there's more to see.
She called out Pedogate back in the day too. John Michael, I know you were away for a while, but were you able to see that the Georgia Guidestones were blown up?
No, I was never able to see them. Oh no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, they got blown up.
What?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Well, you were away. Oh. When was that? Like 6 months ago or a year ago?
Wow. Honey, this has been on It could have been the aliens. It could have been the Trump supporters. It could have been George Soros' bastard.
It could have been
his granddaughter.
A distraction.
Nobody knows. It's a campy sci-fi movie, really. When you think of all the things that have been done and brought to our attention, it's like, what? If you watch it all now on a YouTube video, if they just like did sections of what was, it's like, this is craziness. And it's funny, actually. But it was, we lived through it. It's incredible. Yeah. Yes, indeed. And then they were, all of a sudden there was all these sightings of these obelisks of the new giant George Guidestones, remember? In this, all over the world, like in New Zealand and in Montana, that nobody knew where they came from. They're trying to see that, you know, aliens were probably putting them down here instead of college students or who knows what. And then they blew them up. It was crazy.
My guess would be that they came from the same place that the obelisk came from, you know?
I wonder. Yeah.
Obelisks are a very solid symbol. Very interesting that someone, was it a coordinated effort, they think? Were they made of the same, like, materials and same
I think they were made
at, them, possibly?
I think they were made at the same time. I think that, I know that you've studied the Bible, John Michael, pretty extensively. What about the Tower of Babel? That's kind of what I'm thinking when I see this kind of stuff, is that you know, all over the world, we were able to communicate in this Tower of Babel, maybe a spider web, maybe the, you know, inner web, you know, we're able to, you know, there's technology available that can help us to communicate to everybody in the world, connect everybody in the world, right? And the Tower of Babel fell. I think that
in the Tower of Babel story, they were trying to reach up to get to God's space, right? They were trying to, and then they say specifically, let us build a tower so that we won't ever be scattered again, right? That was their goal. And the you know, act itself is a metaphor, I think, for a lot of different things, like especially the idea of rebelling against God, right? And I think a lot of things that we do besides that are little acts of Towers of Babel, if that makes sense. Does that make sense to y'all?
Yeah,
like,
it does.
For instance, the vaccines are, I think, like kind of like the Tower of Babel in a way, because we're doing technology that we haven't really tested very well, and we're messing with people's DNA. She mentioned that, I think, in the video. That the best term for the vaccines, and I agreed with what she said, is that the best term for it is gene therapy, right? Because you're injecting yourself with mRNA, messenger RNA. And I said this when I first read it in the paper when I was away. I was like, well, you're telling me that the same giant pharmaceutical companies that are the biggest lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and that own so much material and wealth and all of that, right? You're telling me that those same companies aren't going to insert a secondary message of all? You don't think they're going to insert other messages in there? Or can we really trust them to not use that technology in subversive ways and that's going to ultimately harm us very greatly? No, we can't. And anyone who thinks we can is, you know, what do you say to that? So yeah. I think that my point is, I think that even like, I think we do a lot of little acts that are rebellious towards God, right? And that's, you know, just one example for sure. But back to what you were saying, Danielle, sorry.
No, I totally get it. You know, I guess really, you know, what is 5:05? We still have a little bit of time. I think my ultimate point is that God has very many names, right? And you know, whether you want to call it energy or, you know, I guess Allah or Jesus or, you know, the creator, Mother Earth, you know, I mean, I think that God goes by a lot of different names, and there is a theme throughout society, throughout human society, that all seems to rhyme. Like, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And so when you look at all of the ancient texts, and the oldest religions, you know, all over the world, you come up with the same answer, right? And so I think God is bigger than even Christianity or the Bible, you know? And so, you know, in that spirit, I'd like to play a clip. And, you know, I hope, I mean, this kind of is what I think is going on in the world in the form of Graham Hancock. And he's starting out by discussing Thoth, which is a Egyptian god. And, you know, basically like, you know, perfectly describing what is going on today and how it, you know, definitely relates into the Bible and to the, you know, revelations and the end times that we know that we're living in. And with your permission, I'd like to play just another quick clip that I hope we'll, you know, we can all discuss after.
Yeah.
It sounds
awesome.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Very,
awesome.
Very
good.
We live at a crossroads. There's no doubt. We all feel it. We all know it. I don't think it's the first time that mankind has stood at such a crossroads. But here we are now facing it and hopefully dealing with it. I'm going to close with a reading from the Hermetica, from the Hermetic texts. Hermes was the Greek version of the ancient Egyptian god Thoth. The Romans knew him as Mercury. And in a dialogue, the Hermetica, many of them are dialogues between Thoth, Hermes, and various pupils of his. And in one called the Asclepius, a lament is presented. And it's like a prophecy. A bit like the Mayan prophecy. Egypt seems to stand as a metaphor for the whole world in this, and to my mind, for the world in our time. This lament, this prophecy is speaking directly to us. So it's Hermes speaking, and he's saying to Asclepius this: "Do you know, Asclepius, that Egypt is an image of heaven? Or to speak more exactly, in Egypt, all the operations of the powers which rule and work in heaven are present in the earth below. In fact, it should be said that the whole cosmos dwells in this our land, as in a sanctuary. And yet, since it is fitting that wise men should have knowledge of all events before they come to pass, you must not be left in ignorance of what I will now tell you. There will come a time when it will have been in vain that Egyptians have honored the Godhead with heartfelt piety and service, and all our holy worship will be fruitless and ineffectual. The gods will return from earth to heaven, Egypt will be forsaken, and the land which was once the home of religion will be left desolate, bereft of the presence of its deities. O Egypt, Egypt, of thy religion nothing will remain but an empty tale, which thine own children in time to come will not believe. Nothing will be left but graven words, and only the stones will tell of thy piety. And in that day men will be weary of life, and they will cease to think the universe worthy of reverent wonder and worship. They will no longer love this world around us, this incomparable work of God, this glorious structure which he has built, this sum of good made up of many diverse forms, this instrument whereby the will of God operates in that which he has made, ungrudgingly favoring man's welfare, this combination and accumulation of all the manifold things that call forth the veneration, praise, and love of the beholder. Darkness will be preferred to light, and death will be thought more profitable than life. No one will raise his eyes to heaven. The pious will be deemed insane. the impious wise, the madman will be thought a brave man, and the wicked will be esteemed as good. As for the soul, and the belief that it is immortal by nature, or may hope to attain to immortality, as I have taught you, all this they will mock, and even persuade themselves that it is false. No word of reverence or piety, no utterance worthy of heaven will be heard or believed. And so the gods will depart from mankind, a grievous thing, and only evil angels will remain, who will mingle with men and drive the poor wretches into all manner of reckless crime, into wars and robberies and frauds and all things hostile to the nature of the soul. Then will the earth tremble, and the sea bear no ships. Heaven will not support the stars in their orbits. All voices of the gods will be forced into silence. The fruits of the earth will rot. The soil will turn barren, and the very air will thicken with sullen stagnation. All things will be disordered and awry. All good will disappear. But when all this has befallen Asclepius, then God, the creator of all things, will look on that which has come to pass, and will stop the disorder by the counterforce of his will, which is the good. He will call back to the right path those who have gone astray. He will cleanse the world of evil, washing it away with floods, burning it out with the fiercest fire, and expelling it with war and pestilence. And thus he will bring back his world to its former aspect, so that the cosmos will once more be deemed worthy of worship and wondering reverence, and God, the maker and maintainer of the mighty fabric, will be adored by the men of that day with continuous songs of praise and blessing. Such is the new birth of the cosmos. It is a making again of all things good, a holy and awe-inspiring restoration of all nature, and it is wrought inside the process of time by the eternal will of the Creator. I don't know whether we're going to face some terrible global catastrophe or not. I certainly hope not. I hope it will not come down to misery and horror, awful, awful things. There's enough of that in the world already. But I do remember what all the ancient texts say. There isn't a single flood myth. There isn't a single story of the destruction of past civilizations that don't implicate humanity in the story somewhere. Our own behavior, what we do, is part of what we're bringing down on the world right now. What we are manifesting in the world, that is what is coming towards us. We are the authors of this thing, and we can change the story if we want to change it. I firmly believe that. Are we looking at the traces of a forgotten episode in human history? I think so. I think that's what's going on here. And because we've forgotten it, because we are a species with amnesia, because we are so much a mystery to ourselves, perhaps it's because of that that we're so lost and so troubled today, so haunted by the sense of something missing, something that we need to know about ourselves. For the ancient Egyptians, the essential mystery of human existence concerned our spiritual essence, that we are participating in this theater of experience that we call life and the world in an immense endeavor aimed at the perfection of the soul. I've talked with shamans in the Amazon, and when I've asked them, what do you think is the problem with the world? What's the problem with the West? They say it's very simple. You've severed your connection with spirit. You've cut the link. And you have to restore that link if you're going to move forward from here. You can't move forward from the place you're in if you don't restore the connection to spirit. And that seems to me the most fundamental task that all of us now face. Not these exterior trappings of power that have brought such horror and misery to the world. This is the moment of crossroads that we stand at. None of us can can affect changes on a macro level. It's impossible to do so. But we can make changes on a micro level. We can make changes in our own lives. We can make changes in our immediate surroundings. Changes for the better. Changes driven by love. So overwhelming is the notion of global destruction. No, I can't stop that, but I can stop what I'm doing to contribute to it. And if we all do that, then I believe a huge change in consciousness will come, and the world can move on, and we can look forward to a future for our children and our children's children, and once again bring this bright, beautiful, jewel garden of a planet, bring it back to the place it should be in our lives.
Okay, that's deep, bro. But, like, do you, I mean, does that explain, you know, what I think is going on right now, what I think we all think is going on right now?
It's amazing. Jen, you want to say something, babe? I don't want to talk over you.
Sorry, I had muted myself because there was a train going by, so I muted myself.
Oh, okay, good.
Yes, I think it touched on quite a lot of things in that video that jumped out to me in terms of being, like, in line with the Book of Revelation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, definitely there was a lot that stood out to me that made me go, huh, okay, that sounds like, or one of the prophets, right? Like Joel or, you know, Isaiah, some of the prophecies that are contained in those books, too.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And that's why I call it the tome, right? It's like, it's all the same thing. It's like, really, like, these artificial divides really just, you know, are put up so that we are fighting each other when we're really all talking about the same thing, like one, like huge thing, right? So we talk about kosher, you know, versus halal food, right? Come on. It's literally the same family. It's literally the same laws. You know, what is the divide about? You know, and I think that really goes back to the ancient, you know, divide put in to make sure that we never get to this elevated stage of consciousness. But we all read the end of the book and we all know that we win. So, you know, it's already uncomfortable. Like what do we have to lose? You know, I'm not talking about anything violent. I'm talking about all about revelation, about waking people up. That's really, I think, what this book is supposed to be, if you want to get down to Christian terms, but many other religions, many other spiritualities, many other, you know, people who believe in God, you know, they all know that this is the end, you know, but not, you know, the end doesn't mean death for people who are awake to this, people who have had the revelation of what is coming right now and how to live and how to survive it. You know, that's what's going on right now. And I'm kind of proud that we're all here and helping people wake up to these revelations that is going to change the whole world, you know, and P.S. we win. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head there. I don't know. I just try to, you know, wake people up to the fact that it really comes down to love, right? That's what we're supposed to be doing is loving one another, and that's the battle, right? And people get distracted, I think, by a lot of things in life, which we talked about earlier. There's a lot of distractions that are going on, and I think if you can nail that simple message and practice it, right, in the way that you conduct with others and the way that you interact with others, I think that really really makes the difference, and that's what the goal is. So, but I do have to run. I just wanted to call in because you said, I thought that's what you were trying to say, is like call in, and I forgot all about the show the last couple of weeks, but I'll try to remember next Sunday and I'll call in again.
Oh, yay. Okay.
We love having you.
Yeah.
And good luck at all of your, you're doing great. So proud of you.
Oh, thank you so much. I love you both. Have a good
You're
day,
welcome.
Okay?
I love you.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk soon.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
He's a good guy. Good guy. You know, I thought of Ecclesiastes when I was listening to him talk, because there's nothing new under the sun. And the madman who acts as if they're brave, the fact that we're basically experiencing our own karma in real time due to our lack of respect for life, thinking that we are godlike and have the right to tinker around with God's creation, medically speaking, the human body, the earth, my goodness. We're not here just to love. I mean, it's kind of like, that's nice, that's good, but we're here to be stewards of the earth. It requires a little bit of work in that, a little bit of effort, and we're completely failing that, on so many levels. I'm really inspired by some of the things that are going on in Mexico right now, that I'm going to brush up with my Spanish. And I'm like, I want to be part of this. They are, and we're talking like down in the continent on the, I don't know which side of the oceans this is happening at, but there are some amazing entrepreneurs and just people who have the right idea. They are making plasticware out of avocado seeds that will biodegrade, right? I'm like, wow, hello, this is exactly what we need. They're making bricks out of seaweed, and I thought, no, that should be our food. But apparently there's this new scourge on the earth because the earth is cleansing itself. We've polluted it so much that it's just like our bodies. When we're full of toxins, that's when the mucus comes out and we get sick. The earth is sick right now, and it's purging the oceans with seaweed beds. There's like a huge, monstrous seaweed bed coming towards the U.S. That was a headline. Well, it's been happening in these beaches in South America and Mexico. Somebody decided, hey, we can use this, and they're making like hemp bricks put out of seaweed and building communities. That's exactly what we should be doing instead of we're misdirecting our energies on things that are not important. We got to get back to the basics. Or else, like he was saying, we are actually experiencing our own karma due to our own actions. Are we going to be yet another history, lost history civilization that maybe people will find out, maybe not? Are we, because of our own bad management skills as being human beings and what we're supposed to be doing? And it's
happening. Well, I can say that I can happily report that my karma is on point due to recent life events I've alluded to on Facebook. We can't really go into details, right?
You don't have to, but you know what? You deserve it. And faith without works is dead, and you can see. And it's like I had an experience, it's not on a grand scale. Like I'm like, I didn't like get like a huge boost up into the world like you might be having. But I got everything I needed. I'm like, oh, I love how God works. I love how the things I need just boom out of wonderful little circumstances. All my needs are met, and my faith is renewed. And why do not worry. Just keep on putting that good energy out into not yourself, other people. It's almost like that is key to anybody. Good mental health hinges upon getting out of your head and out of your home and out of your body and worrying about yourself and doing something for someone else. And you feel amazing, and you just it's a cascading effect of goodness. And that's what we should be doing.
Which we will, we're talking weeks. I mean, I don't mean to be a news tease, but we're within weeks of announcing this. This really, really, really good news for our family and for our community and for all of the above. And Elizabeth already knows because she's part of the fam, but big things are in the works for my family, number one, and for for the community, number two, you know?
And it couldn't happen to a better person, you know, because,
no,
like I said,
that's true.
Seriously,
and it's,
you're
yeah.
a great person. Your family's great. And, you know, I keep trying to explain in simple terms because I'm dealing with, like, little 8-year-old people right now. And they're getting it. It's kind of like the what do I call it? It's the law of attraction. I think it's just that's what I explained to like a magnet. You put out good things come back. You put out bad things, and it's going to be a good day. Bad things will come to you. So it's all in a smile. A smile can change the whole world, and you can't put it in any more simple terms than that. And, you know, you have spent years doing good things, and good things just can't help but come your way.
Trina.
That's why you deserve it. That's
trying
why
to do the right
her.
Thing.
And,
also, and here we are. And this is proof.
In your life where it, what's the scripture? Too much, if you, let me see, the more responsibility that you have, the more benefits will be given to you, more wealth, because it will go right back out. You're not going to keep, you're not keeping it in your pocket. It's going out so the universe can use you. So he's going to give you lots and lots of ammunition, so to speak.
Precisely.
To do good works.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it works. Yes. And it's a simple recipe for success. And, you know, we get so caught up in, you know, things that make no, like our society is so consumer-based on nonsense things we don't need. When they, Mr. Hancock, I can't remember his first name. Anyways, Graham, when Graham was talking about we are losing our connection to source into the earth, and we are so plastic and frivolous and have no idea what connection to source would be. And you can see the after effects of that is what we have as a society. It would be just so simple to rein back as, you know, if you use the same element of how they want to shame-base us for poo-pooing their new way of life that they want everyone to be, you know, everyone's going to be queen for a day if they want, literally, and we're supposed to be, you know, nice, and they shame us for saying, I don't, you know, we don't feel comfortable with this. There is a whole high school of kids that would rather go to the nurse. That's the option they were given was you can go to the little bathroom in the nurse's office instead of using all the transgender bathrooms. High school kids are not comfortable with their bodies. They just simply aren't. They are putting these kids through unnecessary trauma with this new way of, you know, the equity and the gender equality circus. Parades going on in schools that they have hundreds of kids lining up to use the nurse's office is becoming a lawsuit now, and the lawyers are getting involved. This is the new fight in Illinois, and you're terrible for saying anything about this. So taking that same line of thought, each decade has its own flavor. You know, the 60s was all about love and drugs and free love and down with the war. The 70s, I don't quite know what they was, a continuation of weirdness. Good music, really. I think good music, bad cars. The 80s was a decadence of me, and which led into the, you know, disco and the coke and money and good looks and inward instead of outward.
I usually say the only thing that – the only good thing that came out of the 80s was me, but – I, you know, go ahead.
And probably so. Probably so. I'm not a fan of the 80s much, having lived through it and a little growing up through it. But each decade has its own. We've lost. We're no longer connected to the ecology. Now it's a religion, a cult religion of climate change, which doesn't really put a lot of emphasis into us. Like the, you know, don't litter. We grew up with the litter bug. Don't be a litter bug. Don't waste the water. Now it's more of you know, the drastic, you can't eat beef, you have to eat bugs, blah, blah, whatever. But we've gone into the land of crazy, and now we're shaming people. I think we should pull back in the new earth, getting back into what they called hippie mode, where grounding, growing your own food, homeschooling your kids, getting back to nature, taking care of nature, really, and shaming those who doesn't. If you want to continue with this materialistic living on plastic and, you know, terrible fads and foods and things that are just so fake. It's fake. It's
yeah.
a fake world they're living. And it's not doing us any benefit. I think we should start making fun of them because the cool kids are over here growing gardens and raising chickens and letting their children play in the mud and learning how to, you know, experience life.
Yes, exactly. And that's why, you know, like,
not in a mean way, but it's kind of like, it's not cool to be wearing the coolest shoes anymore. It's cool to run around barefoot because you're grounding, you know, connecting to the earth. We need to make it a point to see how just uncool it is to be following all these crazy trends that they want you to. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will cause our society to have less of a damning. You know, it's almost like he said it's, without saying it, he was saying they were damned to ruination due to their own bad works. It was their own fault that their civilizations fell. Because, and you look back, you know, what was it? It was the over decadence. The family structure broke down. There were, you know, wild parties and child sacrifice and it pretty much what we've got going. And we had it going in the 80s. From the 80s to now, you could see that that way of living produced not glamour and you know, the movie stars that were dancing in Club 58 doing the coke. Well, that led into the degradation of, you know, meth labs in farming towns and crackheads and the whole family structure breaking down. That's not a glamorous lifestyle, you know, the ravages of drugs in our country, but it came that way. And that's a big factor of our demise and will be if it continues.
And well, I'd like to make the connection between, you know, the fact that I know you're talking about from the 80s, but like this has repeated itself so many times of these, you know, cultures of decadence and, you know, like make the people being at the helm of the demise every single time, you know, and, you know, to the Mayans point, you know, we're talking about the tomes. It's not just the Bible. There's so many other religions and cultures that support this stuff, like the Mayans, you know, talk about regeneration, that every, you know, couple life cycles, right, people die off, like, and, you know, at the beginning of this, people, the deaths were more violent, right, but, you know, when we're talking about, like, at the beginning of civilizations, right, but as these life cycles continue to come, they get less and less violent each time, until people can achieve, you know, the ascension, the revelations that are going to make us free. I would suggest that people at this point, it's so easy to learn how to do a few things. One would be how to learn how to make bread, right? Like make sure that you know things that, you know, your ancestors 1,000 years back already knew how to do, you know, that's what I'm saying is that, like, don't make it so that our technology and that our lifestyles and that our, you know, consciousness is so lazy that we don't know things that people in the dark ages, quote unquote, dark ages knew. Right.
But you know what? They've also demonized that. Oh, I'm off of carbs. I don't eat bread anymore. Come on, the bread. How many phrases? The bread of life. Give us our daily bread. We are so bent on. We have to have all these weird things that we have to eat. It's like, I guess when the apocalypse comes, if it does,
Yeah.
Next battle habit.
I mean, you, like, we've got how many things collapsing at the moment? You know what I mean? Like, as we say this, I'm just saying that, like, yes, people are like, yes, I'm going to be non-dairy gluten-free, but you know what? When you're starving, not you, Elizabeth,
sorry.
But, like, when these
are you
people
hungry?
Are...
If you're hungry, yeah. You'll eat your bread if you know how to bake it. That's what I'm saying. And it's the same thing. Other people will be like, oh, I don't need to eat bread because I just, but those are the very basics that they took away from us. You know?
Yep.
If you went back in time a little bit and they'd be like, you can't bake, you don't know how to bake bread. They'd be like, what in the world? It would always be like that, the H.G. Wells movie, The Time Machine, when he goes into the future, the original one.
Yeah.
The original one was fantastic. And he goes into the future and here's all of these blonde-haired children, teenagers, just frolicking around, and everything is given to them. They don't do anything. And he's just can't believe that society has gone from what he came from to complete unawareness of their situation, and somehow someone's taking care of them. They walk up the stairs to this mine-like temple. When the air raids sound, which was a kickback from the air raids of the World War One, it's kind of a cool movie. But how history just keeps going, but society didn't evolve and evolved into this non-thinking, not even aware of another person's life. Another person could be drowning, and they just were like, "Oh, it doesn't affect me." When they're But that's your friend. Well, it doesn't. And it was like they had lost that humanity of caring about another person. And he's like, what the hell happened here? That's exactly if somebody from the, when did we go? 50s, 40s and 50s is about when, you know, people could all grow their own food and make their own bread. And there was that shift right there to the prefab. And now they'd be like in awe that we eat everything out of a little box, and it goes into like a little nuclear machine. It's zapped. But chances, you know, that is. It's like, wow. And that's considered food. And we don't
Absolutely.
Know how to make it if it doesn't.
Okay, Zach, just hold on. I'm going to let him in, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Hey there.
Absolutely. Oh, my God.
Hey.
How are you?
Happy St. Patrick's Day and Eat Your Yard Day.
Good Lord. I thought that was days ago.
It was days ago, but I'm in Savannah, so it sort of never ends. They're doing it all weekend.
It doesn't end here either. I went to the spa, and then we like stopped for a snack afterwards, and there were still people with green hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a mindset.
Let them have fun, you know.
Yes.
You were talking about when food became industrialized, and I am about every year I stumble upon something that just discourages me and scandal. I learned that window actually moves earlier and earlier, and it was quite early in the turn of the century when food started to become so industrialized and the soil became so demineralized that they had to start enriching. For example, they had to enrich flour, and they had to add iodine into salt. So these two things, for example, Wonder Bread was very sarcastic, you know, because it was so deprived of minerals and vitamins that what nutritional value could it have? You know, and
exactly.
Then there's...
Right.
Yeah. You know, so I think it goes... Earlier than the 50s, I think, you know, you're talking really 20s, turn of the centuries, when the pesticide industry started, which is a derivative of the chemical industry and petroleum industry, when these industries and the people who are building them started to really get momentum, they took over the political process. And the food was downhill from there.
I think you're right. You're right on that one. Because you had the catastrophe of the Dust Bowl. That didn't just happen overnight.
No.
You had the depletion of
You're right on that. And in World War One, didn't they had mustard gas, didn't they?
Well, they were using it.
Yeah,
it
was that one?
And as any big, you know, industry, captain of industry, you got to use that stuff afterwards. So I'm sure they found a way to utilize all those horrible chemicals and
dioxin. And dioxin. You know, I think there's two real classes of compounds that are uber and maybe EMF frequencies is the third. But the first one is nuclear radiation and radiation and having to deal with its waste product. The second one are halogens. And so you would classify fluorine and fluoride and chlorine. And so dioxin was a gas that was used. Chlorine gas was used and produced in World War One in trench warfare. And that's, again, what you're seeing are these compounds, dioxin-based, and it's a kind of a class of compounds. But halogens, you know, you have things like bromine and that's added as a fire retardant to foods and wheat. These things should be fluoride in water, in toothpaste.
And the water.
Chlorine
being
used to sanitize sewage. And then it's in the water supply and also to sanitize drinking water. So what happens is when you take these class of compounds and you put it on anything living, it creates these Frankenstein compounds, including chlorophyll, chloroform, that will kill you, right? And these are known carcinogens since the 70s. We've had mountains of things that we have absolutely proven that they are carcinogen, that they are anti-life, and so that we're putting them back in our water, and you can't take it all out. And so in the shower, you get chlorine and you get dioxin in the shower, and microdoses, but your skin's hot and your pores are open, and that's one way you're going to get it in your body. And so that class of chemicals, everyone kind of focuses on carbon as an environmental issue. I don't really see that. I see these things that are right in front of us, go back to DDT and these things that are persistent in our environment. Rachel Carson, Sandra Steingraber. Sandra Steingraber wrote about how a mother will pass many chemicals through her through her placenta to an unborn child. And so the child is downstream chemically from the mother, and the mother is in a stream of chemicals environmentally, and we're choosing to do this. We're choosing to do this.
Yeah, and it's almost as if they want us to have all these chemicals in our body. You know, it's unbelievable how saturated we are. And in the 70s, they were aware of all. They had all these studies, but it was more of a heavily the pollution was out of control, and they knew cause and effect, but then nobody did. Like, they had no control over this, and it just got worse. And it became because the what's the payoff here? It's to make you as sick as possible. And well, hey, here comes the doctor who has a whole bunch of patients, and a whole new industry was born of this. And we know these things. You know, I'm wondering, when these trains are transporting these huge amounts of chemicals, whose chemicals are they? Where are they going? What are they doing with these chemicals? Why do they need all this stuff?
Well, in New York State, that's a very important question. In New York State, when I was working with Citizens Environmental Coalition, one thing we did get through New York State was to create a green chemistry laboratory so that the state was funding bootstrapping green chemistry. And I have to just say that that's a rare thing. And on the other side of it is that we don't even have the tests done for most of the chemicals that are out there of their toxicity, to a degree in terms of their effects on humans and stuff. That's very expensive, but it has to be there's no intention to study those things because it means somebody's got a product that kills people.
Right.
Where are they going? They're part of every plastics industry, everything that we make. Look around your house, all of the carpet, the furniture, cars, everything that's in those are made from our chemical industries, but we can do them differently. So if a Green New Deal should be about that, really, if you wanted to change people's cancer rates, you would change what we live with.
It sounded so good when they came up with that. Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
It certainly did. My God.
It's been around for a while, and environmentalists have talked about this is what we need to do. These are our top 10 things. And when it became political, none of that was in that.
I know, it's insane. And, when people started getting sick, when they stopped having windows in office buildings and they had all of these, noxious fumes from all of the plastics and the carpets and the paints and everything, I would think that would have been a no-brainer. Hey, this is not – no, they just kept on with this way of life. And nothing has – you can't open a window anywhere and get fresh air.
Mm. Yeah, indoor air toxicity is worse than outdoor air toxicity. And I remember New York Public Interest Group did some studies and said, we're looking at outdoor. And then finally someone got smart and said, why don't you, like the nurses associations and the toxics groups said, why are you focusing on smokestacks? The smokestacks are inside.
Exactly.
Well, you'd have to go back to who benefited from the petroleum, who had monopolies
who had
made money on the petroleum, and then who owned the rails. And so if you have big industry that you have an input to that you have to move across the country, you're going to make money every time that moves on a train, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at the turn of the century, those were the kind of robber barons of the Gilded Age that pushed us into becoming, big hospitals, the J.P. Morgans and Rockefellers.
I like you. I'm so glad you called in.
I like you,
I
too.
Do. My God.
I like that you like it.
Yay.
So how do we de-Rockefeller? I mean, I know that there is a, that we can control our garden, and I don't know if they're still trying to outlaw rain barrels, and there was a wackadoodle stage
everything.
Where they were doing that, but
they're still,
they are
going after the holistic way of life, it's unreal. And what we need to do is just continue to try to educate people to the benefits of doing this, and just get a culture, a subculture of people that just know that this is the better way to do it.
Let me just answer here. My answer to it anyway is that, when I say that everything that we need to survive is owned, all of the resources that we need to survive, health care, food, information, housing, all of it, it's kind of an overwhelming task, right, to look at. But when we talk about the resources that we need to take back first, and there's going to be debate around this, but food, news, and health, right? So how do we get healthy? How do we get past all of this stuff? I think this is the equation here, is that, I'm not saying that we have to close down McDonald's. When we live in this capitalist society at this point, I'm not trying to go after, companies that are going to squash me. Are you crazy? What I'm going to do is I'm going to try to give an alternative. I'm going to try to get people in my community and your community and your community and everybody's listening community to plant your own food and to share it with your neighbors. And to make sure that you've got eggs and make sure that you can, I guess, survive what's coming in every way. including physically. Let's make sure that we can ask community by community. Like I said, I live in San Diego. It's easy here. It's really easy to feed the whole community. But in other places like Chicago and, you know, anywhere that really has a winter, I'm certainly not an expert on how to feed your community in those kinds of times. But I'm sure there are people community that do know how to do it. So let's,
we have organized,
this is the collectivism that I'm talking about. Let's make sure that we can feed ourselves and then get the appropriate information to fix our health, right? That's the equation. It's food,
and
then news
is food.
Leads to health.
Food is medicine. And we're not in the point where we can't go to the grocery store is full of good food. And that is how you heal yourself, not by going to the doctor for pharmaceuticals. You can heal yourself with good food. And if we can just empower people that you have the ability to make the good choices. You can make the bad choice and go to the fast food restaurants and eat garbage, and you're going to be sick. Or you could go
or
to
eat ramen. Or, you know, all
or,
these
or
very cheap options. There's a reason that these options are so cheap.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
One of the challenges here, I mean, is, and you were mentioning information, Danielle, one of the challenges here is that social space has changed, and I hope not permanently, because what you were making me think of were workshops that I had seen advertised or gone to some degree, about some of these, you know, how do you raise chickens? How do you do this? How do you, you know, learn from this? It's an evening workshop. It's free, that kind of thing. But they were at a community, they were at a public community center. And that was a nonprofit, and the community supported it, and et cetera. And you could rent it out and do things and have these workshops and stuff. And there was a community radio that was broadcast, and they went after that. But so, you know, but people, that was that was 15 years ago. I'm wondering how much this has changed in terms of how we've become antisocial and stepped away from that. So. Part of it when you go to some of these workshops is that now you're in a community of people that are reinforcing that value, those values, and you're feeding your social life. Okay. So it's not like so this replaces the need for other things. It can be much more integrated when it is, and maybe this is going to, maybe you see this. I mean, we're essentially talking about permaculture and the co-op movement, which has been active since the 70s, very active. And then in the 20s, 30s, 40s, was also very active, you know. So, you know, there are networks of people that do this, but in a local level, my contact with it was going to a workshop, right? And that's a three-hour commitment or an hour commitment. And then maybe there's friends that go, and maybe, you know, but it's in my neighborhood. You know, now I'm not so sure that there are limits if it's on Facebook, right? So this digital,
You know, though, I am seeing people on my what's happening in my town. Everybody has one of those. And there are people who are calling out, hey, do I have any people that have seeds? They're wanting to get together and have – and every town around here does have a community garden, a space that you drive to, and it's a big swath of land, and you can plant there. And they're – people are reaching out and trying to network on our little Facebook groups. So I'm very encouraged that there are people who are aware that this is the way to go. And it's just kind of like you find your tribe and you get your little thing going. And I think we fall into this rut, not a rut, but it's a trap of trying to get the whole world, saving the whole. You can't save the whole world. There's going to be people who just – they are never going to get out of the jump in the car, go to McDonald's and do their little thing. And God bless them. That's your life. You enjoy your life. But I want this, and I want people to be around other people who think this is beneficial, and this is going to be my little community. And every town has them. And it's just a question of finding them.
And you have to network with those people.
And participating. Mm-hmm. Participating, letting them grow and become that. You know, I think it's a slow renaissance, but the renaissance is happening.
Well, speaking of the Renaissance, you know, the Basque region has an area that is they're not politically communistic, but they're cooperative economically, and they are very much kind of like, we need more engineers in our community. Let's go recruit or train some engineers. I mean, very difficult to conceptualize how much they have organized their social life into kind of economic life. And you know, the Basque region's between France and Spain in a mountainous region. It's very autonomous, but that is, talk about Renaissance, that is a key area of where medieval Europe became Renaissance. You know, humans kind of lifted themselves out of the mud and learned to develop all these great ideas. But today they function. I always told people you can't say Mondragon because that's the name of the priest that started it. Because no one's going to know what it is. They're going to be like, what, Mondragon? But if we could figure out those ideas and lift them and bring them here, that might be functional in some ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And my vision here has been that, okay, we fix the first thing, which is people are so chemically induced into amnesia as society that we can't really fight whatever is coming. So we offer the solution of food. Then we go to, news. We get people the correct information. Leads to health. Mm-hmm. What comes after health? And that has a lot to do with autonomy as far as technology and things like that. I think in the past, when these kinds of civilizations, cultures, cooperations have been attempted, there has been this lack of automation at our fingertips, right? And so, I don't really support automation in a general sense because I know that, these nefarious powers control it. But what would happen if the people controlled automation?
One community, I just want to Ithaca has its own local money system, and that is related to automation and locality of businesses. So you have to spend the money and you can work, and your labor of an hour of your labor represents a certain dollar, Ithaca hour, excuse me. And so that always went into local businesses, into the credit union, into the food co-op. And these are, Green Star is an incredible, they have daycare at their food co-op. They have 3 branches. It's enormous. I mean, evolution.
I need to know them.
Yeah. So Ithaca Hours, Ithaca is a very interesting community, has a backstop of 2 major universities with a lot of money, Ithaca College and Cornell University. But in there you have an eco village that's developed. You've got all kinds of permaculture things.
Yeah. We just hit about 30 seconds, guys. Gosh, it always gets so good at the end.
Will you call back next week, my friend?
Sure.
Oh, that'd be great. I would love to talk to you some more. Because this is the way out, is by spreading the knowledge that these things are existing, they're out there, they're fun, and they're doable. And everyone can start something like this,
Absolutely.
And that's what
we want to promote here. Okay. I love you all.
Time.
Please share this if you
love
can.
Love you too.
We will talk to you next week. Goodbye.